very often they are effective people. Either they are people who simply can't function successfully in society, that is, they are losers or antisocial misfits looking for company, or they are escapists or adventurers who don't really want to serve our cause, but who are looking for some politically incorrect diversion, some politically incorrect self-gratification. And they hope that we will be able to provide that gratification for them. And that's the last thing in the world that we want to do. It's not just that these people who have the wrong motivations generally provide us with little benefit. They are poison to us because they drive away from us the people who really can be useful to us, the people who really can and will serve our cause. This is something that is obvious to many of the people that we want, but it took me a few years to learn the hard way to shun optimists, to have zero tolerance for people who like to dress up in uniforms and shout 1488 and give Roman salutes to TV cameras. And I suspect that there still are a few alliance people who haven't yet developed zero tolerance for these freaks. And that's why I harp on the subject so often. We need many more people than we have, but we need winners, not losers. If we begin tolerating losers now for the sake of having more people, we never will get the winners. We ourselves will become losers. You know, people who talk about fighting the enemy in the streets really aren't interested in winning. They just get a buzz from talking about fighting the enemy in the streets. Their talk is pure self-indulgence, pure hobbyism. We're a long, long way from the point where we'll be able to gain any advantage in the streets. We may want to have a security force for certain functions before them. What will be notable about that security force, besides character and fitness, will be discipline and skill, not beer bellies and tattoos. To sum it up, the Alliance has no interest at all in the so-called movement. We're not interested in uniting with the movement, and we're not interested in competing with the movement for members. If anything, we should be grateful that the movement is out there to soak up a lot of the freaks and weaklings who otherwise might find their way into the Alliance and make problems for us.
Mon père disparu. Les souvenirs ne sont plus des souvenirs. ils sont là, vivants, près de moi. Ils dansent et m'enlacent, chantent et me sourient.
All right, welcome, welcome. Welcome, everybody. Welcome back. I hope you're doing well. I hope everything's going well out there for you. I hope everything's good. I hope you're doing well. All right, so we have a new one today, of course. And should be good. Should be good. We're doing a little variety today. I think it's a little variety hour. Variety Friday. I think that's what we're doing. Of course, we did our interview with Carl on Wednesday. And so I thought, you know, it's time for some variety stuff. We have a big one on Sunday. Sunday is 4:20. So the Politics Parallax White Nationalism Founder Series gets a critical edition for 420. I'm shocked, Bill. I would have never guessed you'd do that. All right. Let me stuff around here. Okay. Why is that on that? That's the wrong thing. We're not there yet. That's skipping too many steps. Skipping too many steps. All right. That's where we're supposed to start. Seeing that this is America, predictably, we have additional shootings. This does seem to be a never-ending supply of shootings in America. We're going to do something we're good at, is having random mass fucking shootings. Now, this one was wrong. I thought, given the name, that perhaps this was a Jew. It is apparently not a Jew, at least not religiously. His sister has Christmas posts. Christmas posts. Yes. 420 is the Hitler episode. It is. We put that off. Somebody said something weird. For sure. We put that one off for a reason, though. That wasn't an accident. I also was kind of debating in my head if that's appropriate because, you know, he precedes we call white nationalism by a long ways anyway, so maybe that's not even the right framing for it. But I think ultimately it is. I think so. Yep. Yep. Right. So let's just go ahead and get started. We have a lot of stuff here. And a lot of stuff on weird shit going on in America. That's why I just started it as current events. But we're going to get into some other things. I'd found some other pretty cool documentaries, really, on various critical issues. including one of my new favorites, Footingers. Now they abound. They abound. Yeah. I could see some shitbag is live because his other shitbags that need validation and a pat on their gay little heads are in here to try to like start shit. They think they're subtle, but it's really not very subtle. Pretty obvious who they are and what they are doing. So they'll get taken care of. I'm gonna pay attention to them. But anyway, all right. So I want to just go ahead and start from the beginning. 4chan. Speaking of Glonigs and retarded chaos started from Israel. 4chan. 4chan is kind of a mainstay for a long time. It's been something that people like, especially in this sort of environment, because they get to be anonymous, or so they thought. It turns out, right? Turns out that the majority of the posters are posting from Israel. Yeah, who's Katie Pierce, Patton? For the love of God, don't... Wait. Hey, Patton, he says, for the love of God, please don't cover the fake and gay Katy Perry space BS. Oh, I don't even know what that is, so don't you worry about that, right? Don't even worry about that. Yeah. All right. Let's go on. Let's see what's going on here. This is really creepy because it turns out that there's a fuck ton of 4chan posting that's straight out of Israel. You know, it's like where certain live streamers come from around here. All I'm saying, right? YouTuber, interesting TV. That's straight out of Israel, right? For all we know, why not? How are you going to prove it's not true? Could be. Could be. Yeah, you got to double flush them. Yeah, you do. Yeah, you do. They all got 15 accounts. I mean, that's the sign of somebody that has no fucking life at all. Oh, my God. Yeah, I don't understand this thing, like this like pathetic high school, like I need validation from my stream daddy. He might be a brown Puerto Rican, but I don't even care. I'm gonna pretend it's not real. It's not real because I don't want it to be real that he's Puerto Rican. People got played pretty hard, dude, and they're pretty bitter about it. Instead of facing up to it though, they're still 6 months later coping and seething and coping and seething and crying and coping and coping and seething. They just don't fucking let it go. They don't just move on with their life and realize they don't want to listen to brown people on the internet. Seems like progress to me to decide not to listen to brown people and their and their rent boys on the internet. That sounds kind of like a thing you'd want to do. Especially if you're calling yourself a white nationalist. There's nothing less white nationalist than those fucks. those people aren't even good drama people. Like a bunch of people that wish they were Ethan Ralph, but without 1/100th of the fucking talent Ethan Ralph has. Now, say whatever you want about Ralph, but he's a talented streamer. And these other people are not. No, they're not at all. Where is this thing I'm looking for here? Let me get through this thing. Where did it go? Ah, that's what I was looking for. Okay, got it. All right. Okay, for sure. What else did you say, Patton? He said something else, too. He said, oh, no, that wasn't Patton. That was Renekate. She said, mein Nigga. Mein Nigga. Hail to Renekate and hail to Patton. I'll have an expert dropping the memes hot and fast over there in the FTJ chat. I'm almost tempted to do a meme review, but I don't really want to go there. Can I bring? Oh, I can do that, can't I? Oh, fuck yeah! I forgot he said that. Hell yes, he did. That's right. We actually don't just have the FTJ fixed. We even got the FTJ counter fixed. Fuck yes, we got the whole package. It's all done. It's all done. That's so cool. That's so fucking cool. We're developing some new systems too. New systems are always good. I had developed it, but I actually fucked it up just before I was going to go live. So it didn't work. So I canceled it. I just put Entropy up there. But please do support the show if you can, if you're able to, because that makes it possible. And yeah, let's go. So 4chan. Definitely share the link either way, though, because that doesn't cost you shit. 4chan says, sometimes, this is from Hal Turner Radio Show's website, sometimes intelligence agencies get caught doing things in public, designed to fool the public. And U.S. Intel and Israeli Mossad just got caught. Well, that's a rare fat fucking L. That's a rare fat fucking L for them. Kind of like a Puerto Rican wife. Fat fucking L. Fat and an L. But we're going to call that a win. So they won't ever look into it. Yeah, so the controversial website 4chan turns out to be run by U.S. feds and Israeli Mossad. They originated the entire QAnon nonsense. It is now exposed that all of the, quote, Q was a deliberate intel operation. Well, we knew this for a long time. We knew this for a long time, right? This was something we knew for a very long time, that QAnon thing was an intel op. This is not news, but I guess it might be to somebody, right? Yeah, I think, oh, yeah. That's true. I'm not going to read that, but I'll just let that sit up there for a minute, Robert, because that's very accurate. Very accurate. Yeah, I also agree with that next statement, never in the first place. Yeah, never even to begin with, yeah. I mean, I don't know. If you're 8 or 9 beers deep, anything's funny, you know? Yeah. The hacker done got... Oh, yeah, the notorious hacker known as 4chan absolutely got hacked. Yeah, it's fucked up. Oh, how the tide has turned here. Right, so we knew this. We knew that this QAnon shit was all an op, right? We always knew that this was an op. We always this is not news. So anyway, it says, last night, it was revealed that the website 4chan got hacked. Apparently the very last posting from the entire world. Asking, what the heck is going on the site, was this one? What the fuck is going on? Chicken jockey? I don't know. I don't get it, but it's all right. Whatever. Get the point. Good enough. Then came the announcement that the hackers had done their thing. Got the little classic troll face. Fucking LMAO. You got hacked. Ooh. You got to wonder what's going on here. Like, how did this happen here? How did this happen? Turns out, it wasn't even that complicated. It turned out that they were using a very old and outdated version of PHP, a 10-year-old version, to run their server software. And that version of PHP had a lot of security vulnerabilities. Haxors, that's right, on Puerto Ricans. I found something today, actually, that just reminded me. I found something today that was very interesting. You just brought up the Puerto Rican question, which I was not really a question until about half a year ago, but now it's a very big question. Oh, I forgot about this video, too. I'm sorry, I just realized there's a few more prep shits I didn't download from my Twitter that I'd stashed away for later. Yeah, this one. Okay. Yep. There's actually two really critical ones here. Well, one critical one and one that's related to the Puerto Rican question. Also, as a warning, as a public service announcement, I'm going to say, and I'm reading from Billy Roper's Twitter post here. I'll make sure you guys see this too. Actually, I haven't looked into this myself, but I trust he has. If he's saying this, he says, "This is Billy Roper." He says, "To clarify, it has come to our attention that the protest in Frisco, Texas, tomorrow is being organized by a Jew, and is not in a secure location with an adequate plan for everyone's safety. so we do not endorse it and or encourage people to attend, just observe it and learn. So there you go, that's his announcement. So you've been warned if you're in the area and we're considering doing that. Then again, Frank has a different opinion that you might want to reconsider. Every opportunity has its options. So yeah, there you go. So there's different opinions on that, but you should know that either way. It's worth knowing. Thank you, Patton, and you don't have to worry, man, because I can't cover something I don't know about. Like what is she? What did Katy Perry do? Like, and why do I care? Did she do something I'm supposed to care about? I didn't even hear about a Katy Perry thing, right? I didn't even hear about a fucking Katy Perry thing. What's going on, Pepper Cave? How you doing, man? Bianca, how you doing? All right, let's get back to this before I get too off track. But I did get the Puerto Rican question thing done. And, it's short, but it's worth it. It's very short. You remember this? You know this woman? You know this woman? This shit off the screen for a minute there. I'm so fucking stoked that the FTJ thing came through. That means that FTJ donations can be displayed once again, which is why I really like that working. But anyway, it says Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez revealed her Jewish heritage at a Hanukkah event. This is Haritz. This is J for J shit.
People don't know about Puerto Rico, and one of the things that we discovered about ourselves is that a very, very long time ago, generations and generations ago, my family consisted of Sephardic Jews. You know, the story goes is during the Spanish Inquisition, so many people were forced to convert on the exterior to Catholicism.
Oh, so wait a minute. So you're telling me Ocasio-Cortez, Puerto Rico is full of conversos? Weird. I would have never known this. Very, very strange. Oh, Detroit Al said, Katy Perry supposedly flew into space with Gail King, Jeff Bezos' second wife, a couple other yentas. It was girl power. Yeah. Damn right it was on point, Randy. I know who you're with, dude, so just don't. But, yeah, it was. And look, I mean, I didn't say anything they didn't say. I'm just saying, like, they confessed it, so everybody needs to know that. Yep. And I say, they did.
But on the interior, continued to practice their faith, continued to be who they were, even though they were pressured to not be that on the outside world. And a strong group of people, strong wills that were determined to continue living life as they wanted to live it, decided to get on a boat and leave Spain. And some of those people landed in Puerto Rico.
Okay, that's all we need. We don't need their fucking demon music. We're good. We're good. We're good. We're good. We're good. So she does the, you know, demon dance. But anyway, there you go. I mean, I just found this interesting that the something they didn't know about Puerto Rico is full of conversos. Weird. All right. Anyway, back to what we were actually talking about. Okay, and forever banned. Bye bye. It turned out that they were using very old PHP, right, so they got exploited. 4chan was breached by the Soyjak Party operatives who exploited outdated PHP code to access backend systems, leaking site source files and exposing moderator emails. Some tied to .edu and .gov domains. Yeah, for sure, Patton. We could put out the back call. That can be done. It can be done. can be done. We don't want to listen to Hava Tragelia. No, we're good. that's their theme song. We don't need to hear their theme song. The hacker's got everything. The entire database. The entire database. So that's not good. Wow. Geolocation stats were leaked. Leaked post data revealed Israel as the dominant source of poll activity since 2014. Is anybody surprised? We just did a Gloninger. show on like Tuesday, and what do we have? International Gloningers. Hey, look, it's not my fault. I'm just here noticing. That's all. I'm just here noticing what's going on. I didn't make it this way. I don't think it's cool. I'm not for it. Like, don't blame me. I'm just noticing the shit they're doing. Am I not supposed to notice? Yeah, I'm not supposed to notice. Well, too bad. We're doing it anyway. Fuck that. We're noticing all their dumb gay ops they're running. Almost all posts on 4chan were Israeli intelligence contractors pretending to be in the USA. Whoa. Isn't that interesting? If you remember what happened on October 7 and the day after, there was like a fucking, I don't know, 24-hour, 48-hour period or so, where all of a sudden the internet was a lot less gay and a lot less Jewed out. It's true. Yay. Jewed out. Kind of like Spickwaffen. Mossad has been running an absolute massive propaganda campaign on the American internet. Yeah, surprise, surprise. Surprise, surprise. Despite being around 0.2% of the world population, Israel accounted for almost 50% of all 4chan posts. About 226 million 4chan posts. Wow. I mean, come on. Come the fuck on. That is ridiculous. In other words, 4chan was like Israeli Mossad Central, like their website, right? I'm not surprised by this. I knew there was a reason that I didn't want anything to do with it. I didn't know what it was. It always just kind of creeped me out. It's like the weird cartoon porn shit and just weird, like, I don't know, just schizophrenia. This is schizophrenic. Just, ugh. I don't like shit like that. It gives me the creeps. I thought the Carl Ryle show was good, actually. I thought that was a good one. Yeah, so this is a weird revelation here. This is a little bit strange. Mossad has been using the website for years to help stoke the rise of Nazi and far-right movements hostile toward Muslims. 4chan got taken down by a rival image board hacking group called Soyjack Party. Probably also some kind of feds. Fed-on-fed action. Its database were dumped, moderators were doxxed, proving some were federal agents, and the servers are now all offline. It was roughly half in the last few years. Half what? The gay ops? I'm not sure I follow. They tried to make it third as most people didn't realize, didn't buy their bullshit, so they resorted to trying to post demoralization agitprop. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense, yeah. A few things we've learned so far from last night's 4chan hack. Moderation and, quote, janitors, i.e. Janies, so including students and staff from Harvey Mudd College, University of Washington, University of Michigan, at least including at least one professor. 4chan ran on a version of FreeBSD, which has not been supported for 9 years. 4chan had over 10 million banned users. And most of the bans are because moderators want a self-important power trip. That's great. There you go. Ban. Ban. You will not post outside of /B, troll posts. Private reason? 100 plus posts calling people Jews /faggots. Nice. All right. Which one of you was it? Who did this? Smiles! Smiles says, I missed a couple days. Here's to you. Here's to you, Smiles. Salute to you. Smiles. In court. I would frown in court, to be honest, if I was in court. I mean, you know, if I was like the defendant, I'd smile. I don't know. I mean, if I was prosecuting them, I guess, maybe I'd smile. But maybe I would just frown. I don't know. But maybe that's the whole idea. It's the defiance. Maybe that's what it's meant to encapsulate, this name choice. Hail to you, Miles, in court. Okay, aside from the internal moderator emails and the fact that many admins and moderators were government people using .gov emails, here's the other thing that's fucking dumb about that. Like, let's say you were some, like, government worker or whatever, some government employee that was put on this op, right? Why would you not just make a private email to sign up for your government op message board thing? Come on. It's kind of fucking weird, right? It's kind of weird. Like, I don't know what that's all about. A little strange. Everyone thought B. Elena Torres was a Klingon. Turns out she was just a Puerto Rican. There are some ugly motherfuckers, aren't they? Right, so they're using .gov emails. One of the most interesting aspects of the released hacker information is that the overwhelming majority of posts on /poll came from Israel. Of course they did. Of course they did. On average, over 20 posts per Israeli resident. Whoa. Jeez. This is the poll board here. These are the stats, right? Starting in 2014, Israel. That really, 26,745,669. Let's call it 26,000 posts. Followed by the U.S. at 143,000 posts. Then U.K., Canada, Australia, Germany, Netherlands, Sweden. You go on down the list, it goes. Wow. Mossad has been running an absolute propaganda campaign on the American internet. Interestingly, when an American military guy leaked classified intel, he did it on 4chan. He ended up being caught because 4chan was an intel operation. He was arrested, jailed, pled guilty, and is now serving heavy prison time. Right. So it's a trap. Also, like, you can't use a VPN either to post. It stops you from posting there. The fact that the entire claim of the site was, which made it the go-to site for certain people, was that their claim that all IP information was stripped from postings so the origin could not be traced. But they never told users that web browsers were all being aggressively fingerprinted to identify users. There's some of the browser fingerprinting. Fucking crazy. In about 2017, a new phenomenon appeared in the world. And so, it did so on 4chan. It called itself Q. Q, it was claimed, was a deep intel source close to President Trump. Q was allegedly revealing that the white hats in the government had a plan to save and protect America, and everyone had to trust the plan. Yeah, it was Operation Trust rebranded and resold. Which is what they did, if you're not familiar with that. We've done things on this in more depth, but Operation Trust was a very similar operation that was done in the early Soviet Union, I believe it was, if I remember correctly. It was a long time ago. But I'm pretty sure that's what it was. I think it was in the early Soviet Union when the monarchy fell to the Bolshevik Jews. There was a very similar Q kind of op telling them, don't worry, it's going to be restored. We got people in power that are going to put it all back. You just trust the plan, this kind of shit, right? This kind of shit. Yeah, white hats and echo, yeah. Yeah, for sure. It was all lies. Deliberate intelligence agency psychological operations to keep the people docile. Yep. It's become a propaganda outlet for our own deep state, Israel, China, etc. Of course, Q went on to spawn derivatives such as QAnon, QStorm, all pushing the same trust the plan nonsense. What does today's revelation about 4chan and Q tell you about QAnon and QStorm? The fallout from this enormous hack is still taking place. More and more information is coming out, and more interesting developments take place. I will run additional stories. The takeaway. The feds and foreign intel agencies use real-world websites as honeypots to stir up what they want stirred up. And to pacify what they want pacified. Wild. 4chan, no. Hello, fellow Labradors. We should just let all the pit bulls in. Yeah, I know, right? That's exactly what this is. Well, that's exactly who's running it. Yeah, there you go. Totally trustworthy. Yeah, that's pretty weird. Yeah, I guess it was faltering. So, back to what we know of America. This place is so predictable. It's the same shit over and over and over again. Black violence, spree shooting, gay ops, black violence, spree shooting, gay ops. Economy goes down, economy goes up, economy goes down, economy goes up. Free shooting, violent, black violence, gay ops, all throughout, all around, open your face, every day. And they want you to be cool with it. I'm not cool with it. I don't want any of this shit. I think we should just have like a decent, stable country. Is that like crazy to ask? I think it's crazy to ask, but it shouldn't be. It really shouldn't be. Exactly, it's Operation Trust 2.0, yep. So, FSU. There was a spree shooting at Florida State University. This is something that is pretty consistent in America. You just kind of can expect that there's just always going to be these kind of things going down. Imagery from it. This is the kind of alerts they put out. So this is the consequences there.
We're learning new details about the suspect accused of carrying out a deadly mass shooting at Florida State University Thursday. Tallahassee police say there was no connection between 20-year-old Phoenix Eichner and the victims. He was shot by police and injured in the shooting and will have to spend a significant amount of time in the hospital. Officials say he will then be transferred to a detention center and face charges up to and including first-degree murder. Two people were killed in Thursday's shooting on campus, which remained closed Friday. Five were also injured and being treated at a local hospital. Earlier, officials there gave an update on their conditions.
We do feel that all will make a full recovery. Two of them are possibly going home today, which we're extremely proud of.
CBS News reporter Katie Weiss is in Tallahassee with more. And Katie, I understand you just spoke with a victim in the hospital. What did they tell you?
Well, Lindsay, good evening. A glimmer of hope right now this evening after meeting with this remarkable, inspiring young woman who is in just wonderful spirits despite everything she has endured. She is an urban planning graduate student. Her name's Madison Askins. She's attended both undergrad and graduate school here at Florida State University, and she is now recovering in the hospital tonight at Tallahassee Memorial Healthcare Hospital right here in Tallahassee, just a few minutes from the university's campus. And I want to tell you, her story is just chilling. She says she was first shot in the behind, and then her mom immediately
shot her in the ass.
Survival mode.
That's rude. God. That's insult to injury, or that's embarrassing. Shot her in the fucking ass. Very, very rude. What did she do to him? Eichner. Yeah, I know. You know, that's the thing is, when I heard that name, I'm like, that's got to be a Jew. That's got to be a Jew. But I don't know, man. I mean, we found some fucking, because I posted that actually on Twitter right after it happened. And immediately I got some pushback and I looked at it and, it was, the sister was posting Christmas stuff. So it could be a converso Jew, like an ethnic Jew that doesn't practice religious Judaism, but I don't know, man. I thought that name had to be a Jewish name. It's very, very Jewish. I don't know. Very weird.
Take a listen.
When he got next to me, he reloaded. I heard the clip being changed. I'm familiar with guns in that my household. Both my parents are retired Marines.
Your parents are retired Marines, but you call it a clip and not a magazine? Weird. Okay. Very strange. Okay.
So I've been on a shooting range before, so I believe I heard that clip being changed there.
Twice.
Followed by him saying, keep running. Yeah, keep running. So I know he was hitting people who were moving. I know that if I had gotten up, he would have shot me again.
Now she said,
well, in that situation, if you could not escape, it wouldn't make sense to try to hide, I guess. Like, you're supposed to try to run away if you got the space, the distance to do it. I guess it would make sense to hide. If you couldn't hide, I guess it would make sense to try to play dead or something. I don't know. I mean, especially if you're already bleeding. You know, I don't know. I guess that's the best you could do at that point. Yeah, she sat there and let him reload without moving. Right, it probably would have been better to try to, like, yeah, it would have been better to try to rush him at that point. That's a good point. I didn't even catch that. Yeah, good call, Floyd. Well, yeah. I mean, exactly. I didn't even think of that, but that's true. I don't know. I mean, maybe she's just, like, paralyzed with fear or something, but you would think that the survival instinct would have been to rush him at that point if he's actually straight up, like, reloading. You know, even if he's pretty fast, that usually gives at least a couple seconds, maybe a few seconds. I guess it depends how close she is to him, though. She might have been far away.
Says that the tone in the shooter's voice when he was saying that was just more monotone, as if he wasn't shouting, he wasn't being more somber, he was just being neutral. She said that that lack of empathy, that lack of emotion is what was most striking and chilling to her. She also wanted to mention, I asked her, I said, if you could speak directly to the person who did this to you, who put you in this hospital bed, what would you say? She says, I have nothing left to say to him. He's a bug to me. Those are her words. Now, she wants to thank both police responders who came and helped out and really neutralized the shooter quickly, and also healthcare workers here at the hospital for their quick response. And we want to say she had one surgery yesterday. She needs one more before she can go home. Lindsay?
Grateful that she's okay. Katie Weiss, thank you. Anna Schechter joins us now. She's the CBS News Senior Coordinating Producer for the Crime and Public Safety.
I don't know that we need the rest of this. I wanted to see if they showed any, like, imagery or something.
11:51, he entered onto the campus, and just a few minutes later, at 11:56 or 57, he started shooting. Roberto was 57 years old, and he was a father of a daughter, a husband, his brother. Wait,
did they show pictures of the victims? They didn't show pictures of the victims? Why? It is kind of the shitty thing, right? Like, the guy that decides to do this kind of shit, like, he gets celebrity status of sorts, and then the victims are, like, pretty forgotten.
Posted to social media, so we're getting a little bit more information about the picture. It's a range of victims. We learned from the university president that some of those injured who are in the hospital are students who have survived. Everyone in the hospital, doctors expect to make a full recovery. So that, of course, includes the suspect. You have five victims injured by gunshots, and then the sixth person in the hospital currently is the suspect, who is also wounded by police gunfire.
So what more do we know about Phoenix Eichner? Any possible motive, and what happens next in the investigation?
In terms of a motive, that's a challenge. Investigators are still gathering information from his digital footprint and also interviewing not just the eyewitnesses, but anyone who was in contact with him. That includes, of course, his stepmother and father, but also his birth mother. We've learned overnight that there was a contentious relationship between his birth mother and his father and stepmother. Lots of legal filings going back and forth between them over many years. They're also going to try to find anyone that he was talking to about potential plans. At this time, we have no information speaking to motive.
That's pretty useless fucking news program there. We got no information and can't tell you shit. Like, the hell, dude? How useless is that, right? How useless is that? So, this Austin and Carmelo thing. This is pretty repulsive. They have been really, really sick to these this victim family. One of the reasons, though, is because it was done entirely wrong. The father did the usual CRS thing and came out and was like, "Oh, race has nothing to do with this. I don't even care about race." No, motherfucker, race has everything to do with this. It's the only thing that has anything to do with this. Without the racial component, it just wouldn't have happened. Of course, when there's black violence, they have to put a black news presenter up there for it. Eventually they come and they have this, the press conference. At this press conference, the victim's father shows up and they kick him out.
Waiting to hear the Anthony family talk for the first time on the record. It was supposed to start at 11. 10 minutes turned into 20, then 30. The reason? Austin Metcalf's father, Jeff Metcalf, had walked in.
Ah, glad they stopped the whole thing because the victim's father showed up and they didn't like that. And this guy fucked up pretty bad. He came out and did one of these, like, I've already forgiven him. It's not about race. Like, really, dude? Really? If you're going to forgive him and you're gonna, this is going to be one of those turn the other cheek kind of shits, like, do that privately. We all don't need to know about that. And you know who definitely doesn't need to know about that? The rest of the world. And all these predatory Negroes. Because guess what? They're not seeing that shit as a strength, bud. They just see that as a weakness. And it just invites more confrontation and more problems. This one here. This one. Nope. Yeah. This is what he says in response to his fucking son being stabbed. In case you missed it, we're just going to go ahead and probably, all right, most people I'm sure have seen this, but we're going to just reiterate this just in case somebody hasn't seen this.
These documents and
that doesn't change anything.
Okay.
This has to do with me and God. God teaches us in the Bible. He talks about forgiveness. He also talks about revenge.
When they're talking about forgiveness, there's a prerequisite to that forgiveness, though. You're not supposed to just have forgiveness be this like clear weakness of accepting evil shit happening to you and then treating it like that's fine. It's not what forgiveness is. Forgiveness is supposed to come after repentance. The person who did the crime against you is supposed to repent and then you forgive them. There's an order of operations to it. It's not like you just... When they just like auto-forgive them, especially when they make a big public showing of it like this, when they just auto-forgive like this, it just sends the message that you are weak and you will accept any abuse. That's what the message is when you do this. And it was a lot worse when I thought that this kind of thing was organic. We're going to show you tonight how not organic it is. So they have a freak out, basically, because he shows up to this thing trying to be like the virtue signaling hyper mega church Christian. Say it like that, mega church Christian. It may be like, what would you call those? Those big mega churches with like the John Hagees. I don't know what you call that. I just call them mega churches, but Zionist churches, doesn't really describe it great either. Whatever. You get the idea. It doesn't give the right impression, right? It gives the impression that we're willing to be abused as a people. And that's really fucking bad. That's a really bad thing to be putting out there, especially when it's in regards to a population that likes to do that, hence American blacks. I'll show you more on that in a second, too.
It's not invited.
Evangelicals, yes, thank you. Yes, that's the right word for it. He's an evangelical, I guarantee it. I mean, I don't have to like look into the guy's personal background to know that. It's a specific kind of Christianity that is... Now, the weird thing is, I guess there's some exceptions. We actually had one guy on the show once that was like a not Zio-cucked evangelical. That was a long time ago, but he seemed relatively based on these kind of topics for... evangelical Christian, but in general, they tend to be the sort of like Zionist kind of cucky types like this. And it really does Christianity no favors. And really, Christianity should deal with that somehow. Because right now, what it does is it sends the message to the world that it's people that love to be victimized. They're okay with a sort of submissive orientation to other hostile populations and stuff like that. Not good, not helpful. Colonizer, he said, make Mississippi wind chimes great again. I have no idea, sir. What does that mean? Is that like the kind that make the like little bing 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 noises in the wind? Is that what you mean? I'll pretend that's what you mean. Yeah, there was luck. There was a reason. There was a reason. Okay, there was a reason for lynching. All right. They want to tell everybody now, and they do this, right? They communicate like an understanding of it, that the people that got lynched were all like innocent bystanders and they didn't do nothing and this sort of thing. But the reality is usually not that at all. Usually the reality is that they did a lot. And I'm sure there were a handful that really actually didn't do nothing, but I'm sure in a lot of cases, it was not that at all. I'm sure in a lot of cases, they were guilty as fuck. You know? And it's also worth remembering that of people that did get lynched, there was a lot of white people that got lynched. In fact, there was more white people that got lynched because of per capita, for one thing. And there was, like, they didn't lynch people for just the reasons that, you know, they want you to think. They lynched a lot of people for, like, cattle theft, stuff like that. You know, there was a bunch of other things that they did it for too. It was a kind of vigilante justice of a community when they had the impression that justice was not going to be delivered. So, yeah. Thank you, Colonizer. Let's get back to this. Thank you, sir.
He knows that it's inappropriate to be near this family, but he did it.
Carmelo Anthony is charged with murder in his son's death at a track meet in Frisco on April 2nd. Jeff Metcalf said nothing. He just stood and waited.
Okay. There is no argument, as far as I'm concerned, that this... Back a second to the book. There is no argument, as far as I'm concerned, that he needed to stab this kid in self-defense. Why? Because this guy here was plenty built, okay? He was plenty able to fist fight himself and defend himself with his fists. And so was the other kid. They were both big football players. Like, you didn't need to resort to knives. You know, you could have fisted it out if it had to be that way, right? You could have just hit each other, you know? But clearly there was something else going on there. On the other thing from Big Nig. Where's all the Big Nig posts? Oh, right. I should also remind, just because I just noticed it scrolling, looking for another picture. This, by the way, is his judge. So what do you think? Well, I already made this point in the other show, but what do you think the chances are that she's going to see him convicted? When she looks at him, she sees, like, her son. I mean, quite literally, right? So there's basically a 0% chance that there's going to... Well, I don't want to say that, but there's a very small chance that there's going to be a proper conviction here, if that's really where it's going to go. And I don't think she can just straight up be like, you're free, but I think she can do a lot of stuff to sway the scales in his favor that are not quite that explicit. So there were pictures of him. I had some pictures of him from last time we covered it. Where the fuck did it go? Weird. Maybe I didn't save them. I guess I didn't. Okay. Well, anyway, you get the idea. He was plenty big. He was plenty big. He could have defended himself. If it was a self-defense thing, he didn't need to stab him at all. So they're trying to claim that this is a self-defense thing, and blacks are doing some of the fucking most ghoulish shit where they're like really celebrating this, making rap songs out of it, making a big deal out of it. Yeah, that's it. The way he'll get off is the Negro's judge will block evidence like him asking, was this self-defense, to the cop, having been caught with a knife at school before, the frivolous spending of him and the family from being, quote, admissible. Jury won't know, and he'll get off. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think that's correct. That's exactly what they'll do. She'll just make certain evidence inadmissible, right? Stuff that's critical, right? Especially him having been caught with the knife at school before. It means that he's, you know, walking around armed all the time. He's looking for it, right? Colonizer, he said the Negroid doth chimp out too much. Oh, sir, you have not yet to see chimp outs. Are you guys ready for chimp out season? Chimp out season is right on the horizon. I get the really strong feeling that they are gearing up for it, bud. I get the really strong feeling that they are ready to rock. That they're going to put out a George Floyd or something like that. I got that feeling. I was wrong last year, though. I did feel like they were going to do it last year, and I got that wrong. But it was a couple, like, close calls, right? There was a couple instances where they almost did it. Like, they got right up to the edge of where they wanted to go. And then it just, like, the case wasn't compelling enough. The propaganda around it wasn't convincing enough. So they just didn't turn out, I guess. But, you know, it is summer, so it's definitely chimp out season.
Yeah. Anthony's charged with murder in his son's death at a track meet in Frisco on April 2nd. Jeff Metcalf said nothing. He just stood and waited. The group hosting this told him to leave or they'd call Dallas police. The group's founder, Dominique Alexander, made this statement.
It's a disrespect to the dignity of his son.
Jeff Metcalf was escorted out by DPD before the family arrived to speak. Ultimately, it was not a court order that made him leave, but because the owner of the building said he was trespassing. Metcalf shook hands with officers and then left. This press conference was about hearing from Carmelo's mom, Kayla Hayes, and we finally did.
We believe in legal process, and that is what the truth will come out.
Imagine the coaching that they had to go through with her to get her to say that we believe in the legal process. Just imagine. Imagine the fucking coaching that had to happen. Oh, a tower is forming. Too many G's in that fucking tower, though. Better get rid of them G's. Tower of power. Yeah, buddy. Change that thing out. Yeah.
So the family who is the loss, my heart truly goes out to you.
The family says they've endured threats, lies, and racial harassment over the last 2 weeks.
Our family has been under attack.
Mostly over a fundraising page they say they haven't been able to access until Wednesday. They're fighting claims they're profiting off of this or living lavishly from the funds raised.
We have endured death threats. My husband had to take a leave of absence because he's afraid what may happen.
Her husband had to get off work. Like he really, really wanted to go to work. Her husband really wanted to go to work, guys. But, you know, he just had to do it. There was just too many threats and whatever, so he had to do it. Like, that's the only reason, though. He really wanted to go to work, like, badly. But they fucked him out of it. They just said, you can't go anymore. You just threats and stuff. Here's threats. Like, you can't come. He's like, oh, no, I can't go to work. Oh, shit, that sucks. Right, so we've gone over it in pretty big detail about the fundraiser, so I don't think I'm going to go back over that, but there was a fundraiser. I believe now it's almost up to $500,000. It's like $400,000 right now, something, right? And then there was like a dozen or so like fake ones, right? So other blacks trying to scam other blacks out of money for this, right? It was retarded. Like how many of these fucking scam ones there were. I think we counted 30 or so different like little scam fundraisers. So, yeah. The fact that they can raise, we were even looking into like who these people were that were donating to it. This is public. You can just read it. I mean, they weren't even hiding it. And some of them were like black lawyers from Atlanta and shit like that. It was kind of what you would think to a degree, but it's just fucking crazy. And the messages they would leave, like, my prayers are with you. Be in power, my brother. It's just like, what? You can't even believe the kind of, like, fan crap that has come out about this motherfucker. I'll show you in a minute.
Our family.
We've asked for comment from Jeff Metcalf. He told us not to quote him. We're also told this will be the last time we hear from the Anthony family before a possible trial. But that will not stop all the talk from the outside and any more surprises that have come with this case. In Dallas, I'm Jobin Puniker.
Wow. Okay, so like I said, the blacks are really, they're pumping it out big time, dude. Where is this shit? Oh, there it is. Yeah, it's the one I'm looking for, I think. Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah. Okay, so like I said, there's all sorts of fan shit coming out by them now. There's rap songs. They're selling T-shirts. They're loving it. They're loving it. Yeah, that is some black privilege right there. You're right. You're right, Lonica. Black privilege. Restraining a suspect who is high on drugs. Bail, $1 million. Stabbing a teen to death at a track meet. Bail, $250,000. Right, so it's a quarter of the bail. And one guy is doing his job. And doing it the way that he was trained to do it, by the way. Another guy is just a savage noogle. Wow. It's craziness. Let's see what blacks are saying about this incident and their feelings on it. Well, shall we?
Hey, to all of the people who are against Carmelo Anthony, me as a black man in America, white people, I'm telling you and I'm telling you now, you ever even think to approach me, bully me, harass me, think you're going to be with your twin brother or twin whatever, and do anything to me, I too will poke you as well.
You will?
Straight to the heart.
Really?
And that's on self-defense. This is not the Jim Crow era. This ain't 400 years ago. This ain't 1619.
Should be.
This ain't back in them days.
Should be.
Y'all don't want to end up like Austin. Leave black people alone.
Wow.
Y'all didn't play fair for 400 years. We ain't playing fair with
400 years. 400 years of suffering. Only. Shut the fuck up. You ain't never been a slave, nigga. You ain't never been a slave. And we don't need to hear it from you. But you know what they are doing? They're selling T-shirts. No, I'm not kidding. They're selling T-shirts. Yeah, bud.
Hey, you know what it is. Tweet A, tapping in. Anybody who fuck with me, fuck with my music, you gotta fuck with Carmelo Anthony, man. Justice for my dog. Website coming soon. You gotta tap in, man. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Great. So, we have, where does this one go here too as well? Here is the
now judge. When
this is the judge that will be responsible for hearing his case. Her name is, oh fuck, I read it earlier today. What was her name? I mean, chat's going to know. Shit. Ah, I'll find out in a minute. I forget what her name was. We read it the other day. Karen's not on Karen. What is it? Shit. Anybody know what it is? Monica says her name is Nigger. Really? That can't be her name. Hmm. Shaniqua? Shaniqua might be her name. No subtitles for Knicker Babble. No, I don't. I don't. It's its own language. We used to just call it Ebonics, but I mean, it's evolved, hasn't it? It's really gotten way worse. It's like they all took Xanax together, like a lot of Xanax, and now they're like, shit, you know, I'm up to do big snoo. What? The fuck did you just say? Let's not forget. Wow. Let's see if I can find the rap song. Oh, you know, that's right. I shared it. I could probably dig it up on my own account. Oh, wow. Shit, dude. This is the... Yeah. Okay. I don't even know about this. So this lawyer that he had here, apparently he's got a big rap sheet himself. Noogles of a feather flock together. So this is that guy, right? Apparently this is his rap sheet, we're told. Dominique Alexander. This is the man advocating for Carmelo Anthony. Look at his rap sheet. Birds of a feather. Yeah, I'll say. I will say. Oh, wow. Oh, it's even more than that. This is his, those are his mugshots. Look at the old ones. He looks like a fucking 70s pimp with that, like, that hair, that perm hair, when the blacks perm out their hair. Wow. Damn. God damn. It's crazy, dude. That is crazy. Monkey Mumble says, mechanized him. Yeah, that's fair. Fair, we can go with that. Monkey Mumble works for me. Let's not forget this, the worst kind of overrepresentation we're dealing with here as well. Black males, 6.5% of the U.S. population, 94% can't read proficiently at 18. 63% don't work full-time, 72% illegitimacy rate. Yeah, so they're bastards. They don't know their fathers in a lot of cases, most cases, I guess, according to this. 33% are convicted felons, 50% of the male prison population, and they commit 60% of all the murders. But remember, white people, racism, and guns be the problem and shit. That's right. Right. Now, look, if you ask Black Twitter, who does more crimes, whites or blacks? Be like, white people do all the crime and shit. I read it on a thing. The FBI says so. Because, you know, per capita and whatever, right? Per capita is not something they can handle. Like, it confuses them. And what's worse than the fact that it confuses them, they've actually come up with a retarded conspiracy theory to explain per capita away. I wish I was kidding. No. They actually do. It's like trog-tier, psychotic, ridiculous, retarded conspiracy theories, right? Is that level of stupid. It's just exceptional. It's kind of breathtaking, really. It leaves you taken aback going, my God, that is fucking dumb. And schizophrenic at the same time. Wow. Fucking wow. Yeah. So on top of all this, they've even got fan rap songs.
Touch me and see what happens.
They touch me. Now they grieving in merch. I'm chilling in Terps. Let's go. Brr. Yeah, out on bail like it's fashion week. Told the judge I'm good. He dropped it to a quarter G. Now mom's in the Benz, bros rocking off white. While the news still run that twin boys cry at night. Fox got my mug shot in full HD. But the GoFundMe saying pray for me. Got him confused, am I savage or saved? Depends what savage. Headline gets the most plays. Yeah. Family of faith, nah, family of finesse. Turn grief into gold, put pain in a vest. The tent was a setup, he pushed our slice. But y'all turned a school scuffle into Christ's second life. He said move, I said bet.
He pushed me once, I cashed that check. Now I'm chilling with my publicist, posting quotes while the lawyer read Psalms in a fur coat. Yeah, I gave them the truth, they want tears, but I don't cry for cameras or fake tears. They said, why'd you run? I said, why'd he touch? This ain't track and field, this is don't do too much. Media flipped it, now I'm the villain, but I'm on Cameo, signing death threats for a million. Mom doing press, merch linked in the bio. Meanwhile, I'm ghosting the priest from Ohio. Where's the remorse? It's locked in the safe, right? Right next to the knife in the legal briefcase. I asked the cop if it's self-defense, then smiled like, can I leave now? Said yes. They said he died in his twin's arms, so poetic. But tell the twin, don't push next time, pathetic. You play tough, better know the price. I turned his last breath into streaming rights. You got morning candles, I got sponsorships. I sell trauma in deluxe bundles, bonus clips. Died for a tent, that's a minor feat. Now the whole state know not to play with me. They said I whispered, see what happens. Well, look what happened. Stats went platinum. Now your family got sermons. I got captions. Me wanted justice.
Wow.
I wanted peace.
You wanted peace. It's one peace, guys. One of peace.
Now rest in grief.
Rest in grief. You just wanted peace, guys. You just wanted peace.
His mom's in black.
Wow.
My mom in drip. God bless the boss system, man.
His mom's in black, my mom's in drip.
Amen.
I got you don't hate them enough.
Pastor stands, news crews, candles, GoFund scam. I got a defense and a playlist deal. He got buried in questions that I won't feel. I said, don't touch me. That was the script. Now I sip champagne off the tip of the clip. He said, why? I said, read the report. Now I ghost the DA like a Netflix short. Y'all got grief. I got leverage. Y'all got loss. I got credit. I ain't just free. I'm trending worldwide. And y'all still asking why. Can't touch me. Can't touch truth. Can't touch the price of fame paid in proof.
Wow. Fucking breathtaking, really, if you think about it. If there was justice, that would be the outcome, wouldn't it be? If there was actually justice. They have the balls to write in that fucking song, that shitty little rap song. I wanted justice. I wanted peace. No, you didn't want neither. You wouldn't know justice if it pissed down your fucking back. And you don't want no peace. Get the fuck out of here. This is the judge that's supposed to deliver justice.
We can have, you know, summer interns come up. And they are every race, creed, color, gender. But they can see someone that looks like them on the bench. I think that is so beneficial because it's representation. And when they look at me, you know, young kids, you know, law students, whoever it is, I want them to say, if she can do it, I can do it too.
Great. Per capita O's. Yeah, I like per capita O's. You guys ever eat per capita O's? He's already got his grill in and everything. Wow. He's got his grill in and everything, as they like to say. Per capita O's. Shit. Wow. I'm almost at a loss here on this one. This is too much. The nerve on these motherfuckers. Scamming and grifting shit that's gone on for like the fan base. This motherfucker has a fan base. Good God. Holy shit. All right. Yeah, I mean, if you're going to be like a buck trying to threaten me, like, you might not want to have like some gay female fucking face jewelry in. Like, that's not intimidating. I mean, he's already got gay face, but like with all that other shit on there, like, it's even worse. Let's see where. Yep, there's our judge who's going to deliver us justice. So like I said, the thing with the parents is not. Oh, I think we already did that, didn't we? That's the same thing, right?
wake of this tragedy.
And she's saying, yeah, she's saying, don't stop harassing us.
Stabbing for the first time, asking for people to stop attacking their family.
In wake of this tragic incident, our family has been under attack. Whatever you think would happen between Carmelo and the Metcalf boys, my three younger children, my husband, and I didn't do anything to deserve to be threatened, harassed, and lied about. The lies and false accusations that have been said about us, especially over the past week, has been overwhelming.
The press conference was delayed when Austin Metcalf's father showed up. He was escorted out by police. Anthony's mother expressed condolences for the family's loss.
Good God.
Go, there's so much about her that you don't know.
Oh, that's not it. That's not it. Yeah, fuck it. I'm not going to be able to find it. All right, whatever. Okay, so, right. That's the situation on that one. But the question is, how did it get here? Because we have a long collection of these, right? We just had this guy saying this cucky-ass shit.
Not for me to seek. God will take care of it. Karma. I believe in it. It's very unfortunate that this other child decided to make a bad choice that's going to affect him for the rest of his life. I have compassion for every human being. This is not, I want to make this very clear. This is not a race issue. This is not a black and white issue. I don't want someone stepping up on a soapbox trying to politicize this. I don't appreciate some of the remarks I've seen online that people say there was this fight and there was, they don't know. They weren't there. I know the truth. So unless you were there, unless you saw it, don't spread gossip.
Just to ask you this one question.
There you go. He denies the race. Now, like I said, unfortunately, there is a long history of these. We found out a long time ago, I believe it was on this show, why this happens. And it is an intentional goal of mine to find out the entire backstory of how this works. Right now, you can't. I've even deployed like AI things trying to look into this deeper, and you don't get great results. So whatever they're doing is very much not something that's made public. But this community relations service is sent out to meet with these families as soon as one of these racial incidents happen. The government knows it's racial. The government is fucking sure it's racial. How do we know the government is sure it's racial? Because it has a whole department that they deploy whenever one of these happens to try to quell the anger. And, apparently, to get them to read one of these type of statements saying, oh, race has nothing to do with it, right, you know. Fucking sad. This is what that looks like. And this is not just one of them. There's many of them. Here's some more instances where this happened.
You know, we don't know the kids. We don't know their backgrounds. We don't know their story. They're forgiven from me. He was an amazing kid.
That's Elijah jamming out with his dad. I'm told they had a special bond.
He was my protector.
For Elijah's sister, Delaney, she said it's his confidence that she'll remember most.
Anything I'm doing, whether it's social, I know he's just going to be at the back of my brain being like, you got it. I know you got it.
Elijah DeWitt, a loving brother, son, and standout athlete with a bright future cut short.
He was an amazing kid. He will be missed.
And tonight a judge denied bond to both.
Did I move it too far ahead? I thought this was one had it where it denied the race aspect. Because those are the killers that killed him. I could have sworn the father denies the race thing here.
People may ask, why do you sit down and do this? He was the love of our lives. And we want people to see how amazing he is. And will forever be.
Elijah DeWitt was a rising star, a great football player, getting division.
Why are they always football division players too? Interest.
But about for it. His mom, he was more than just an athlete.
I have a note that's above his bed that he never took off, and I said, "I love what you do, but I love who you are, way more.
Don DeWitt said Elijah's organs will be donated. Already his eyes and heart valves have been passed on. After the 17-year-old was shot and killed outside the Dave & Buster's in Lawrenceville on Wednesday, two suspects, 19-year-old Chandler Richardson.
A worthless fucking thug. Worthless fucking human garbage thug, number one. And the human part is contestable.
And 18-year-old Kamari Bryan.
And the same situation.
Were arrested in Anderson, South Carolina, facing charges of murder. Remarkably, Elijah's dad, Craig, told me he forgives the shooters who killed his son.
You know, we don't know the kids. We don't know their backgrounds. We don't know.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we do. They're fucking hood rats. Here's another one. Now, this guy's son was stomped to death by a pack of them. He wasn't even an adult.
All I can do is just hope that they can find forgiveness in their heart and find a way to be able to come to terms with what they've done, man. I mean, I just love my children with all my heart, and it's just unimaginable that we could ever come to this point.
Jonathan Lewis, who shares the same name as his son, says his kid kept to himself and had plans of moving to Austin, Texas with him. Instead, those dreams were shattered. Metro's homicide unit is investigating a fight that happened last week near Rancho High School. So far, no arrests have been made.
Violence just begets more violence, and these children just don't really even know what they're doing half the time.
Lewis expressed disgust and disappointment at the brawl that killed his 17-year-old child, but he says he hopes to use this to start a dialogue on youth violence in the Las Vegas Valley, and that includes teaching kids interpersonal and conflict resolution skills.
This is not geographic, though. This is everywhere in the United States. Really everywhere in the United States, but really everywhere in every multiracial country. We're going to show you more of that in a minute.
Honestly, I think that it's just a failure of all of humanity to recognize that we need to be teaching our youth how to be able to coexist.
Now, Lewis.
Though this, like, coexist, like, oh, we forgive you kind of crap, this all just keeps getting cycled around and around and around. So they spun it up a little bit. It used to be like, what they used to do? They used to be all, well, race had nothing to do with it. But they kind of added a little bit of variation, I think. It became a little too obvious. But at the end of the day, it's always this, like, we forgive, we need to move on. Oh, it's not about that. We're going to get to the most disgusting one of all of them.
That race doesn't play a role in this. I'm married to a Filipino woman. She's got black.
Of course you are.
Cousins. When we get together for our extended family gatherings, for birthdays, for graduation parties, for holidays, we're a beautiful picture of what we hope to be as a society. But when I asked Brian Leprinzi in the initial prosecutor's meeting that I had with him, I asked him if race made a difference, if my son's skin color made a difference in the way in which they're approaching it. He said yes.
The Summit County prosecutor.
Of course it did. So this is Ethan Liming's father. So he at first had put out this race doesn't matter quote, and he had been approached by the National Justice Party at the time to make a protest out of this and to not accept this race doesn't matter shit. He had rejected it at first. At first, when they had approached him, he had said, no, we don't want to be involved in that. Go away, Nazis, or whatever, right? Well, he changed his tune later. Once the prosecutors decided to basically let these little thugs off, then what he did is he changed his tune. Then he's like, oh, well, I mean, yeah, maybe it did. Maybe this was a racial thing. Too little, too late, right? And it didn't go well. It didn't go well after that. And basically they walked. They walked. Now, here is one of the most disgusting ones I think I've ever seen. This guy went above and beyond in his homework here.
You know, I wish that my son, Aiden.
Iron Guardsman! What's up, man? He said, hope everyone is having a good Friday. Also, N. Hail the Iron Guardsman.
Aiden Clark was killed by a 60-year-old white man. I bet you never thought anyone would ever say something so cucky. Blunt.
Oh, I thought you were going to say cucky. Okay.
But if that guy killed my 11-year-old son, the incessant group of hate-spewing people would leave us alone.
hate spewing.
The last thing that we need is to have the worst day of our lives violently and constantly shoved in our faces. But even that's not good enough for them. They take it one step further. They make it seem as though our wonderful Aiden appreciates your hate, that we should follow their hate.
Hate.
And look what you've done to us. We have to get up here and beg them to stop. Using Aiden as a political tool is, to say the least, reprehensible for any political purpose. And speaking of morally bankrupt, politicians, Bernie Moreno, Chip Roy, J.D. Vance, and Donald Trump, they have spoken my son's name and used his death for political gain. This needs to stop now. They can vomit all the hate they want about illegal immigrants, the border crisis, and even untrue claims about fluffy pets being ravaged and eaten by community members. However, they are not allowed, nor have they ever been allowed, to mention Aiden Clark from Springfield, Ohio. I will listen to them one more time to hear their apologies. To clear the air, my son, Aiden Clark, was not murdered. He was accidentally killed by an immigrant from Haiti. This tragedy is felt all over this community, the state, and even the nation. But don't spin this towards hate. In order to live like Aiden, you need to accept everyone. Choose to shine. Make the difference. Lead the way and be the inspiration. What many people in this community and state and nation are doing is the opposite of what you should be doing. Sure, we have our problems here in Springfield and in the U.S., but does Aiden Clark have anything to do with that? Did you know that an 11-year-old boy could be passionate about gardening, that he could haggle for a better price at a yard sale? Did you know that he researched different cultures to better appreciate and understand people that he interacted with? Did you know that one of the worst feelings in the world is to not be able to protect your child? Even worse, we can't even protect his memory when he's gone. Please stop the hate. I said to Aiden that I would try to make a difference in his honor. This is it. Live like Aiden. Thank you.
I agree, Bill is accidentally gayer than AIDS. Yeah. Gayer than AIDS. Gayer than Gatzmeyer, you might say. Definitely gayer than AIDS.
Hate.
This whole, like, we don't want to hate. no, hate is the correct response. Really, hate is kind of, it's not enough. It should be more than hate. Murderous rage might be the right exact emotional reaction. Hate? No. Hate's for people that piss you off. Hate's for Puerto Rican scammers and their cucks. They'll come into your chat 6 months after they fucked up. That's what hate is for. This should be murderous rage. That's what their reaction should be. If they were, you know, healthy people. Unfortunately, though, I think that there is a European equivalent of this as well.
Be prejudiced, you know, always.
Sorry, South African, my fault.
Prejudice, you know, always look for the best in people.
We need to send a message out there that hate has no place here.
As the outpouring of grief continues to flow through tributes here for Vylien, it's apparent that this community is united in both heartbreak and anger. Regardless of race or religion, they all want the same thing, justice for Vylien.
It's not about the color of my skin or the color of...
I think it's Australia, actually. It says African community, so I guess it's like the fucking blacks in Australia. My bad. Patton, he said, what'd he say? Hard times create strong men. Strong men create good times. Good times create weak men. And weak men create hard times. And he gives us the Diagonal salute. Yes, yes, they do. Very true. The cycle continues. At some point, that shit's got to end. At some point, enough has got to be enough.
Family and her community. It's broken for a much loved woman who lived for her family and her community.
Mum always said if I died, no one would care. Sorry, Mum. You sort of got a bit of a spotlight now.
And her family hopes they can use that spotlight to force real change.
We're all the same. We all need to feel safe.
Steve Hart, 7 News.
Well, let's go straight to Rachel Baxter. Rachel, the husband of Filene White and members of the African community are right now meeting to discuss the youth crime crisis.
Okay, we'll need the rest of this. So I think you get the idea. Boom, 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 boom. Even an international one thrown in there. So
such hate.
So the Community Relations Service is an America thing. It's the Department of Justice thing. But it's, oh, I forgot, there's another one. What's that? What the fuck was that guy's name? What was the name of the guy that was, it was in Vegas. He was a police chief, and he got ran over by, like, 2 grinning monkeys, and then they, like, same thing, right? What was that guy's name? Typing? Not typing, it's freezing. Fuck you. This guy's name. A retired police chief, that's it. Okay. Andreas Probst. Probst, I guess. P-R-O-B-S-T. This is also the same sort of thing, right? They're literally live streaming their crime, mowing this guy down, or recording it anyway. Hit the car on purpose. They're joyriding in a stolen car. This is a stolen car that they're joyriding in. Is it the end of it? This video player they have is really weird. Okay, whatever. No. What's this shit? Fuck off.
All right, go.
What is the daughter? This one was particularly bad too. Why is this not coming up? I want to know exactly what they say to these families. What I'm looking for is a whistleblower. There it is. There it is. Ironically, the channel that this is posted on is called TND. I'm not kidding. It's called TND.
Well, my name is Taylor.
bear with me, guys. This is not something we've ever really done before. But we are devastated by the senseless murder of Andy. Andy's life was robbed by two individuals who did not believe that lives of others matter. We believe that Andy's murder is a direct result of society's decayed family values and the strong effects that social media...
It's just the society. It's social media. It's our society. It's our values. It's anything but, like, blacks being blacks.
...has on our youth. We as a family in no way feel that Andy's murder was based on race or profession.
Oh! This is on the TND channel right there, as you can see. On the TND channel.
In no way feel that Andy's murder was based on race or profession. Was based on race or profession. Murder was based on race or profession. It was a random act of
violence. Just random.
We ask you to not politicize or use Andy's murder to fuel political agendas or to create cultural wars. Now, you are familiar with how Andy died.
Okay, so the big question arises, and this is why I wanted to bother to find this one in particular. What the fuck is being said to these people to get them all to say this? This is not organic. Believe it or not, it's not just a country full of cucks or something. It's actually the result of a specific action by a specific group. Community Relations Service. I want to know what they're saying. What are they saying to these people? What are they threatening them with? Is it legal action? Are they saying that if you say this and something happens, we're going to prosecute you? Is that what they're saying? They're saying if you go out there and say that this is race-based, we're going to prosecute you if there's a riot or whatever, right? Or you're going to be responsible if the Klan comes out and strings them up something. What are they telling them? What is it? They're saying something that's intimidating them all into saying this. I want to know what it is.
Community Relations Service, also known as CRS, is an agency within the Department of Justice. CRS was authorized under the 1964 Civil Rights Act and also the Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Jr. Hate Crimes Prevention Act in 2009. CRS provides four services: facilitation, mediation, consultation, and training. We don't prosecute. We don't have any law enforcement authority. Also, we're neutral. We're third-party mediators. Our services are free. And so we really are able to help communities when there is conflict and tension.
We address conflict and crisis on the basis of race, national origin, and color, gender, gender identity, sexual orientation, disabilities, and religion.
Basically, anytime it's not straight white men that do it effectively. So if you go back to their history, they were founded with the Civil Rights Act.
Officer survival is the first priority. However, in order to be safe and effective, officers must be able to differentiate between a threat and a cultural norm. Under emergency circumstances, events always dictate an officer's response. This video will address only non-crisis situations and will provide basic tools to recognize cultural norms of some Arab and Muslim Americans.
So to understand the community from our perspective is a great thing for officer safety and community safety. because misunderstandings get people killed and can create situations as extreme as a riot.
Stereotypes of Arabs, which have existed throughout American history, may influence our perceptions of individuals.
We have Aladdin, Sand, AK-47, hates America, terrorist.
That we don't speak English. The women, that we are oppressed, that we are uneducated.
Nobody says algebra. Nobody says astronomy. Nobody says Krista McAuliffe, the teacher in the Challenger explosion, who was also Arab American. So we're almost programmed to think Arab negative, maybe neutral, but rarely will people say something positive.
You can tell this is old. This is from 8 years ago. Yeah, I wonder why. Well, I wonder why they think negative things.
The stereotype that exists of Arabs and Muslims has been terrorist. Suicide is considered a sin in Islam. To kill an innocent person is considered to be a sin in Islam.
Then who exactly are Arab Americans? Arab Americans immigrated from the Arabic-speaking nations of North Africa, the Arabian Gulf countries, the Fertile Crescent, and the Middle East.
Arab Americans have been coming to this country since the late 1800s. There are estimates of at least 3 million Arab Americans in this country. If you really look at Arab Americans, they're very much a part of the thread of American society. From our small business owners and entrepreneurs to teachers, to doctors, to lawyers.
Amazing.
Unlike the stereotypes, amazing. Arab and Muslim American women are often educated professionals.
Of course they pick her, because she's like probably like what, like 5% Arab or something. She looks white as fuck. You know, come on. Nobody ever thought of that woman and said she's fucking, you know, Arab. Come on. That's a real stretch. Come on. They're really grasping for that one.
Respected by their families and active in their communities. Contrary to popular belief, many Arab Americans are Christian. Can you tell which of these people are Arab?
No, because they're all invaders as far as I'm concerned. Nor do I care. Like, does it make any difference? They just don't belong here, and their influence here is a negative. So, yeah, at least at the very least, their cultural influence is a negative. Well, this one's a doctor and a lawyer and an astronaut. I don't care. Like, so what? We got our own versions of all those things. If they're all those things and all these awesome things, okay, great. Go do those things in Saudi, wherever the fuck you're from, and, like, good, make that place not a shithole, okay? But we don't need you here. The heart of all this is the myth, the story that we need. That we need them. That we're relying on them. This is all like these amazing people, and oh, they have all these gifts to give us, and oh, like what about all these talents they have to share with us, and all this shit. Like, well, if that's actually true, let them improve their own country that they're from. The thing is like 98% of the time, it's not even true. So it generally doesn't even fucking matter. But they always use this. They'll always point to the exceptions, the outliers, and say, oh, well, you know, this, and this guy. So therefore, you should accept them all because there might be one diamond in the rough, right? We don't need that. And if it's true, let them fix where they're from. But this is the CRS. This is what they're doing. This is an important scene right there, because they literally cite MLK, and they literally say that they are, if you go, they actually have a Twitter, and on their Twitter it says that they're upholding the mission of Martin Luther King. Okay. So putting aside the Afro-Marxist crap involved, why is it that a citizen like that, that was turned into a martyr, that you're going to now make an entire federal agency that revolves around upholding his mission? Does that even make sense? Doesn't make sense to me. The core thing is I am trying to find out desperately what it is that they say to these families. They're saying something. There's no way that all these different families that have never met each other, that all have the exact same situation in mind, or experience. They have the same experience of being victimized by non-whites. There's no way that all these different families never met each other, don't know they exist, they don't know each other exist, that they all come up with the same exact narrative. There's no way that's a thing. And we've been covering this for more than a year. I noticed, actually, that some ripoff individuals have basically just copied our narrative around this agency and acted like they discovered something. But this is an important one. This is why. This is why it is that these families say these cucky things. That's why. The more important question is, why is it that a government, the American government in this case, feels the need to deploy an entire government agency for the purposes of maintaining this multiracial experiment at all costs? Why is that? They're not telling us the truth. They're not telling us what their real motive is there. They're not telling us that, hey, your country is predominantly run by Jews. Jews feel safe in a multiracial, multicultural, multiethnic society. Therefore, we're going to create that at great cost, and we're going to do anything to maintain it. Any amount of sacrifice of your people's children on the altar of multiracialism is fine with them, as long as they get to keep that multiracialism. In a multiracial society, a Jew blends in perfectly. They're like anybody else. Very hard to distinguish them from other individuals. Nobody's looking too closely, are they? It's a hell of a thing to do. It's a hell of an extent to go to just for them to feel like they aren't going to be singled out or identified or whatever. A real, real stretch. That's quite a ways to go. Certainly isn't Pocahontas. No, she's not. Gandhi was educated in Britain. He was going to read to a white British woman. After Gandhi read it, he went back to India, created an uprising. Indian protesters pushed up Britain, removed from India, saying India is for Indians. Why do white Western countries have to take these people in? Why can't there be countries for white people? Well, exactly, Trish Faron. That's our message. Yeah. Well, you know, that's the whole thing, right? Like, this always has to be about hate. Well, I mean, look, like I say, like personally, I like to dish it out where it is most warranted. And sometimes it is. And honestly, watching these motherfuckers just slaughter, you know, stab our children, our people's children. It's not obviously my child, but you know what I mean? Stab our people's children at a fucking track meet. Because, let's be honest, we know what it was. It was because his sense of pride was offended. It's always that. It's always that with these people. It's always that fucking shit. It's always some minor slight. It's always like, oh, how dare you say that to me? How dare you look at me that way? How dare you ask me not to be here? How dare you this? How dare you that? It's always this, like, entitlement. Honestly, if everybody just had their own fucking country, it would be a lot better. If Africans, sub-Saharans anyway, had just stayed in sub-Saharan Africa, I think they would be better off in a way. I mean, not necessarily materially. I don't think they would be better off materially. That's not our concern. It's not our concern. It's not our responsibility to make sure they have a cushy, materially rich life. That's not our responsibility. And if they want that, that's theirs to make it. I think that people just, well, I don't know. I mean, at this point, they've made such a mess of it. I don't even know how that ever gets fixed. I think Thorazine might be right that, like, at this point, to have any semblance of Save America, you're probably going to have the cities get nuked. They're probably going to have to get fucking nuked, bro, before, like, you have a chance of any kind of quote-unquote Save America, right? We know what it is. They open the floodgates on our countries. They create all these programs to strip us of our true sovereignty, control our own future, because it makes them feel safe. It makes them feel like a Third Reich won't rise again, basically. Nuclear war is a good thing. Well, I mean, maybe. I mean, maybe that's what it takes, you know? I don't know. Just don't be in a city, I guess, when that happens. Your ass is grass, dude. You're toast. You're toast. It's kind of... it really speaks to the level of desperation they have to keep this thing going, that they're going to do anything to do it. They're going to create entire government agencies just to maintain this situation. Pretty incredible. I wanted to take a look. So we've seen these before. I don't really want to rehash all these things, but actually, I don't think I've seen this one. Have I?
Mediation.
We have seen this one, right? Yeah, we have. I think we've seen this one. And it's got all the diversity in there, right? You got, wait, where is it? They got a Sikh teaching the class. They got every racial group in the class. They've got a China woman here as the program analyst. You got a black woman. You got a China, I don't know, some kind of Asian. Japanese guy. Black family getting approached by an Asian cop. Hispanic and another Hispanic, I think. Black guy, black woman, Japanese guy,
is no better.
Sikhs, another black woman. A classroom full of mostly white people being lectured by a Muslim woman in a headscarf there. And she looks like she's Filipino, actually. You had two blacks sitting there, standing there rather, gazing longfully at the spot in which Martin Luther King took his last breath. Look at the deep, pensive moment they're having. This is a hell of a government organization to have. Anybody that looks at this has to admit, this is a little bit weird, isn't it? It's a little bit try-hard for a government organization. Like, why in the hell? MLK was not, at least not officially, a government person. He was not a government resource. He was not a government whatever, right? I guess he was. I guess he was. Well, they've created an entire worldview, and they'll do pretty much anything possible to maintain it. I wanted to see, this is a webinar they gave. What all is in there? What are they talking about here? What is going on in this webinar? And it looks like as part of this webinar, they have an Indian, a black, somebody not on camera, and that a white woman or a Jew? A Jewish woman, I guess. They go through all the stories, all the wonderful stuff. And there you go. I mean, you can see what the story is. What is the CRS? Created under the title, not, or Title 10, I guess, of the Civil Rights, I was going to say 9, because it's usually about Title 9, but Title 10 of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. CRS, a U.S. Department of Justice agency, is the federal government's
peacemaker.
And I wonder, would we need a peacemaker if we didn't have to have a multiracial society? For community conflicts and tensions arising from differences in race, color, national origin. Now, the great magic idol at the end of the Indiana Jones exploration of this topic is to find out what the fuck it is that they say to these people. Before we do that, though, let me actually go back here and look at this one for a minute. Because I did find one, ironically, from Valuetainment. It's run by some kind of Arab dude or something. Bet David. This is not written by him. This is written by Connor Walcott. I don't know who Connor Walcott is. That name sounds familiar. Ah, no. Jesus. Are you kidding? Let's see if I can just search this name, see if I can find out who the hell this guy is. Connor Walcott. Let's see. That's not really coming up with nothing. Okay, there is something. Login. I don't have a fucking LinkedIn. Kidding? Maybe it's... Oh, there it is. There is a Twitter of his. Okay, so I was looking for. So this is... Whoa, what's that? I don't want your hat. Kidding? Let's see who this guy is. All right. No, I want your hat. Incidents of anti-white racism were on the rise in the United States, but even grieving families are denying this trend. A division of the Department of Justice known as the Community Relations Service may be behind it. Yeah, nuke. I used to have a nuke drop. It was a long time ago, though. We got to get that back. I think I can probably get that back. Find our nuke drop. It'd be useful. I have one for Trump saying nuke Israel, but that's just a start of the solution. We need the whole total solution, if you will. Let's see. Drop. Where'd it go? Yeah, there it is. That's a nuke drop. Well, that is probably a good one because it probably is the only way that this actually gets cleaned up at all. When everyone just finally gets fed up enough and they're like, listen, bud, fuck you, and... Could be the solution. Who knows? Maybe that's all it takes. It's true, though.
The small town of Springfield, Ohio, has found itself at the center of a heated political controversy in recent weeks, following alarming reports about the local immigrant population. According to as-of-yet-unverified claims from concerned citizens, Haitian nationals resettled in Springfield under the Biden Department of Homeland Security's Temporary Protected Status TPS program have been seen killing and eating wildlife in local parks, and in some cases, abducting household pets as well. These claims were quickly adopted as a Republican Party talking point, with stories of migrants feasting on dogs and cats being used to illustrate the consequences of the Biden administration's lax border security measures. Former President Donald Trump himself repeated the claim during his September 10 debate against Vice President Kamala Harris, drawing mockery from his opponent and a fact-check from moderator David Muir. Further investigation into the matter on the ground in Springfield has since suggested that there may be some degree of validity to the claims, but the reports remain unsubstantiated by most major media outlets. But while potential threats to Springfield's animal population are still under investigation, the human cost of the situation is proving to be equally concerning. Since 2020, between 10,000 to 20,000 Haitian nationals have been placed in Springfield through the TPS program, with migration rates increasing during the gang uprisings in Haiti earlier this year. The latest census data reports that Springfield has a population of roughly 58,000, meaning the influx of immigrants grew the town by one-third. The sudden increase in population has overwhelmed government services, significantly reduced available housing, and led to steep increases in crime and car accidents. The Aiden Clark case. Tensions between local residents and migrant communities escalated significantly in August 2023, when 36-year-old Haitian national Hermanio Joseph swerved his minivan into oncoming traffic and collided with a school bus carrying more than 50 elementary schoolers. 11-year-old Aiden Clark was ejected from the bus during the collision, then crushed beneath it when the vehicle flipped over. At least 25 other children were injured and required hospitalization. Whoa. Joseph, who was not licensed to drive in the state of Ohio given his immigration status, was charged with aggravated vehicular homicide, a fourth-degree felony. He now faces up to 9 years in prison for the crash. In the year since Clark's death, his name has been brought up as yet another example of the effects of unchecked immigration. Most recently, Republican vice presidential candidate J.D. Vance, the junior senator for the state of Ohio, described Clark as a child who was murdered by a Haitian migrant who had no right to be here.
Correct.
Trump's War Room account similarly mentioned Clark, laying the blame for his death squarely on Vice President Harris. Last week, Nathan Clark, Aiden's father, responded to the national attention brought to his son's case during a town meeting. "You know, I wish that my son Aiden Clark was killed by a 60-year-old white man," Clark, a longtime teacher, said. "I bet you never thought anyone would ever say something so blunt. But if that guy killed my 11-year-old son, the incessant group of hate-spewing people would leave us alone. They make it seem as though our wonderful Aiden appreciates your hate, that we should follow their hate. And look what you've done to us," Clark continued.
See, even this understanding of his, right, that, like, this is what they can't understand. This is not just about your son, sir. Like, it's sad. It is very sad what happened to his son. That's not cool at all. It's very fucked up. But this is not just about your son. This is about the sons of all kinds of other people that also might get killed by some motherfucking Haitian that doesn't even belong here. You know, some like 69 IQ savage. Let us not forget what happened on the island of Haiti, that it became such a... I don't even know what to call it. Such a demon-infested hellhole. I know you want me to say nigger, but it's beyond that. It's well beyond that. It's like okay, so if anybody forgets for whatever reason, Haiti was a jewel of the Caribbean. Haiti was a French colony, and it was a place that Europeans of the 1800s would go to, like, vacation, even. American, you know, wealthy people and stuff like this. Frenchmen, a lot of Frenchmen, because it was a French colony, right? Well, that all ended when the blacks had a little uprising and murdered every man, woman, and infant, white man, woman, and infant, on that island. Killed them all. Even the babies. And then that eventually wasn't enough. They didn't stop there. Then they went and they murdered every mulatto that they could find, every halfling, everyone that had any white DNA at all. It was a quite literally a localized white genocide in a very literal, kinetic sort of way. That's how Haiti became Haiti. Now it's a little floating Caribbean island version of Africa. Maybe some would even argue even more disgusting and savage. The idea of importing the racial stock of a place like that, that did a thing like that, is ridiculous. Why would you ever do that? You can't even possibly argue that they have something to offer us. Their average IQ is, like, their intelligence is so low. It's ridiculous. It's like, you know, 75. If they were white people, we'd say that they're borderline retarded. Like, literally. So why would we want to import a population of borderline retarded cannibals and savages? For what purpose? Now, we don't want to do this. But unfortunately, there are a lot of very powerful Jewish organizations that do.
Springfield, Ohio.
Let me keep this going.
Speaking of morally bankrupt, politicians Bernie Moreno, Chip Roy, J.D. Vance, and Donald Trump. They have spoken my son's Clark's said, comments in this now viral video generated significant controversy, with many taking particular issue with the grieving father's wish that a 60-year-old white man had been responsible for his son's death rather than an immigrant. And yet, while Clark's statement by itself is rather shocking, it also serves as the latest point in an alarming trend in national politics. A disturbing pattern. For years, family members of people harmed or killed in similar incidents have made remarks calling for unity and downplaying the racial dynamics of the situation. In dozens of completely unrelated cases in recent years, situations just like this have played out across the country, with grieving families rushing to emphasize peace and harmony, despite clear evidence of racial animus or rampant criminality, provided, of course, that the victim of the crime is white. Take, for example, the case of 64-year-old Andreas Andy Probst, a former California police chief who retired to the Las Vegas area.
That's the one I just showed you of the daughter saying, race has nothing to do with this, and then him getting run down by those two fucking jackals.
2009, after 35 years in law enforcement. In September 2023, Jesus Ayala, 18, and Jameer Keys, 16, carried out a citywide crime spree that involved four car thefts and several hit and runs. After using their stolen Hyundai Elantra to perform pit maneuvers on multiple cars, the two juveniles spotted Probst riding his bike on the shoulder of the road. Ayala, who was driving the car, quickly accelerated towards Probst while Keys, who was riding in the passenger seat and filming the incident on his phone, called out, yeah, get his ass. The car crashed into Probst from behind, shattering the windshield and sending him flying, at which point Ayala and Keys sped off, leaving Probst for dead. Probst died of his injuries at a local hospital later that day, and police were unable to identify the perpetrators for nearly 5 weeks. At the time of their arrest, the teens joked that they would only receive a slap on the wrist for their crimes. They were later filmed jeering and making obscene gestures at Probst's wife and daughter in the courtroom before being charged with murder, attempted murder, and grand larceny.
Yeah, they were given the finger to the wife and the daughter after this.
Speaking to reporters outside the courtroom, Taylor Probst, the victim's daughter, called Ayala and Keys entitled pricks and remarked that they really have no remorse. It's just a game to them, she continued. They really don't care if anyone else lives or dies. They don't care about themselves, if they live or die. And that can just be shown through their own actions. But when addressing the public in a press conference following the initial arrests, she took a more measured approach, stating, "We believe that Andy's murder is a direct result of society's decayed family values and the strong effect." 1 month later, Jonathan Lewis Jr., a 17-year-old student in Las Vegas, fell victim to a similar incident. Lewis became involved in an altercation with a group of black classmates behind Rancho High School after one of the teens allegedly stole a pair of headphones from Lewis's friend. The confrontation turned violent, and a cell phone video taken by a bystander showed Lewis being knocked to the ground and mercilessly kicked, punched, and stomped. Lewis was transported to a nearby hospital, where he was pronounced brain dead. He died 1 week later. So far, 9 teens between the ages of 13 and 17 have been charged for the incident, with several facing murder charges and some likely to be tried as adults. Immediately after his son's death, Jonathan Lewis Sr. created a fundraising page with the following message. The human race is calling, screaming for us to see our unity, calling us to break the cycle of the imprisonment of violence and apathy, begging us to see that when we gather, great power of change is possible. Great power of awareness will be directed to the mob so the mob can demand change, can cry out to humanity and scream the pain of the children. This is a humanity thing, beloved people of the United States.
Ugh.
Not a race thing. Other examples of racial...
There's another racial denialism. And it's amazing. I mean, it's just amazing how consistent it is. It's time and time and time again. It's the same thing over and over again. It's not race. Race doesn't matter. Race didn't do this. Race isn't involved. It's not race. It's not race. It's not race. No, it literally is.
Racially charged incidents being downplayed with white guilt-filled calls for unity have played out countless times across the country, including during one particularly brutal weekend in mid-2023, when three prominent liberal activists were murdered in Baltimore, New York, and Philadelphia. Even to an uninformed observer, it could easily appear as though each of these statements was based on a single script.
Yep,
and there may be a good reason to suspect this. In many of these cases, there is sufficient evidence to suspect the involvement of a largely unknown division of the Department of Justice known as the Community Relations Service.
Mm-hmm.
While neither the agency nor the families of the victims are likely to confirm any rumors of collaboration, the fingerprints of the CRs are visible in each of these situations. The Community Relations Service. Most people are completely unaware of the very existence of the CRS, but this agency has been actively operating on the national political stage for nearly 60 years. The CRS was established by Title X of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, intended to serve as America's peacekeeper by servicing communities facing conflict based on actual or perceived race, color, national origin, gender, gender identity, sexual orientation, religion, or disability. Originally intended to be a division of the Department of Commerce, the CRS was transferred to the DOJ under President Lyndon Johnson. The initial scope of the agency's mission focused on communities facing disputes, disagreements, or difficulties relating to allegations of discriminatory practices based on race, color, or national origin. But in 2009, the mission was broadened by the Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Jr. Hate Crimes Prevention Act.
Let me stop there for that. So, the Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Jr. Hate Crimes Prevention Act. So you know what that was, right? So Matthew Shepard was this faggot that got dragged to death behind a pickup truck in, I want to say, Montana. It might have been Wyoming. It was Montana or Wyoming. It was that area of the country. At the time, this was in the late 90s, there was a great screaming and crying and kvetching about this incident. Now, what they didn't tell the public is that this was largely, or likely rather, the result of a meth deal gone wrong, which is not exactly surprising or unusual given that faggots and meth go together pretty regularly. It's a faggot thing, right? So he gets killed because of this meth deal. So we think. The public is told that he's killed because he's a fag. And they have a public outcry, this effectively engineered public outcry. And on this political capital, they pass this hate crimes prevention bill. I don't know who James Byrd Jr. was. I think he was some black that got like beaten to death or something. Who cares? Anyway, you get the idea. So because of this, they were able to create this sort of extra category of crime called hate crime. The very concept of hate crime itself is weird because all crimes are usually motivated by some kind of negative emotion. Hate, greed, some other kind of animus, lust, these kind of things. This is what motivates all crimes. So it makes it like a double super special crime. And adds additional sentencing and punishments on top of it.
In 2017, then-President Donald Trump proposed eliminating the CRS as part of his administration's larger border security proposal, deeming the agency redundant and non-essential. However, after objections from civil rights groups, Congress rejected the proposal and did not approve any funding cuts to the CRS, resulting in no changes to its operation, per the CRS website. CRS works toward its mission by providing facilitated dialogue, mediation, training, and consultation to assist these communities to come together, develop solutions to the conflict, and enhance their capacity to independently prevent and resolve future conflict. All CRS services are confidential and provided on a voluntary basis, free of charge to the communities. CRS is not an investigatory or prosecutorial agency and does not have any law enforcement authority. CRS works with all parties to develop solutions to conflict and serves as a neutral party. According to the agency, its primary purpose is to help communities resolve racial tension and civil unrest without resorting to violence or litigation. It accomplishes this by facilitating conversations between community groups, local governments, and law enforcement agencies, as well as providing civil rights education and conflict resolution training, and conducting on-the-ground intervention after hate crimes and bias incidents. In practice, this means that CRS interventions almost exclusively consist of urging white victims and their loved ones to avoid inflammatory remarks about their cases while simultaneously working to secure lighter sentences for offenders. This strategy was perfectly typified in 2018 through the CRS work in Lewiston, Maine, an incident the agency lists as a case study of its work addressing national origin bias. After weeks of simmering tensions between city residents and a large population of Somali immigrants, a racially motivated fight broke out in Lewiston's Kennedy Park. During the fight, 38-year-old Donald Giusti was beaten to death with a rock. Three men from Somalia were arrested in connection with the incident. At the request of the Lewiston police chief, CRS intervened to help ease racial tensions and strengthen community relations by hosting seminars and promoting cross-cultural events to improve local tolerance for migrant populations. With social pressure dissipating, the man responsible for Giusti's death was able to plead no contest to a charge of criminal negligence, for which he served 9 months in prison. Another defendant pled guilty to misdemeanor assault in 2020 and was sentenced to 1 week in jail and a $395 fine. After working with the agency, the Lewiston chief of police agreed to contact CRS whenever officers made an arrest that could inflame race-based tensions in the city.
Wow. There you go. Another defendant pled guilty to misdemeanor assault in 2020 was sentenced to 1 week in jail and a $350 fine. After working with the agency, the Lewiston chief of police agreed to contact CRS whenever officers made an arrest that could inflame race-based tensions in the city. Right. So if you really look at it, when this really kicked into high gear, now I think that these people have been doing this CRS, this Community Relations Service, I think they've been doing this shit since 1965. But maybe not quite to the same intensity or frequency or regularity. Now I think it's a thing that coast to coast, nationwide, the instructions are established. If there is a incident where a black kills a white or something where it is a non-white on white crime, that this CRS is to be called and invoked, and there that way they send out their representatives to come and diffuse all of this, right? And by diffuse it, I mean, based on what it looks like, based on the results and what we can see publicly, we have to assume that these victim families are being threatened with something. Something or other. What exactly? Who knows? They don't tell you. We're trying to find out, and what I really want to find is a victim's family who feels that they've been screwed over by this process and wants to be a whistleblower on it. I really do. It's stuff like this. It's agendas like this that sometimes I do wish it was we had a bigger audience base where I could try to put that word out wide and try to see if we could find one that would come forth and be a whistleblower about it. Give us an interview telling us what happened. What did they say to you? What pressure did they put on you? Come out here and make this race denialism statement, denying that race had anything to do with the murder of your family member, when you know, I know, we all know, that this was entirely race-based, that every conflict between non-whites and whites in America and any other racially multiracial society has everything to do with race. I don't say every conflict, you know what I mean? Pretty much every conflict that isn't over something like money or something. But every other conflict, it seems that way. Whenever it's it's about their pride, it's about the fact that they feel disrespected, it's about shit like that. Whenever it's like that, it's always race-based. I want to know what they're telling them, because they're threatening them or they're bribing them. And I don't think it's a bribe. I think it's some kind of threat. Somebody had speculated that the threat, Mostly Peaceful, I think is her name or something. She had said that the threat that they were given was that if they don't say this, that they'll be responsible, legally speaking, for the race riots that ensue. So, like, in other words, they either have to come out and make this statement, or if there's race riots and, you know, they come through and all the blacks burn down all the businesses and stuff, that they'll be somehow held responsible for what the blacks did. In other words, the chimp outs will be on them. And so these families go, I'm not going to be sued for millions of dollars when a pack of blacks comes through and burns everything down. So they make a calculated decision here that, like, okay, well, it's better to just deny what we know to be true, pretend it wasn't about that, and then that way we're off the hook.
At the same time, and with no apparent coordination with the CRS, Donald Giusti's sister and uncle put out statements calling for peace and hoping that their family member's death would give this community a voice to say something needs to give. As is the case with all the other family statements discussed previously, these remarks were made seemingly unprompted by any outside sources, and yet they nevertheless furthered the goals of the CRS. But the influence of the Community Relations Service stretches back to long before 2018. Rather, the CRS has been a driving force in American cultural development for six decades, making its presence known during the most tumultuous times in the nation's history. Accomplishments of the CRS. The CRS lists its notable historical accomplishments in an interactive timeline, beginning with the Selma marches in 1965, during which the agency worked with protest leaders in Selma, including the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.,
Reverend Doctor,
law enforcement representatives, and city officials to craft agreements on how far the protesters would be able to progress along the route and the response demonstrators would receive when they encountered law enforcement on the parade route. In 1968, following King's assassination, the CRS is credited with preventing a riot in Memphis, Tennessee, even as violence broke out in more than 100 other cities. After telling a crowd of King's supporters to go home peacefully, CRS representatives also encouraged local African-American gang members to avoid causing civil disturbances that day. Other notable historical interventions from the CRS include 1973, negotiating an end to the 71-day siege in Wounded Knee, South Dakota. 1974, overseeing busing efforts as Boston desegregated its school system. When 20,000 people gathered to protest the desegregation efforts, the CRS steered the crowd away from violence. Later that school year, the CRS developed an agency-initiated monitoring system run by trained personnel to identify racial tensions in schools and address the problem before violence broke out. 1992, attempting to soothe community tensions during the Rodney King riots, with efforts mainly focusing on the Black, Korean, and Latino populations of Los Angeles. 2001, shielding Muslim, Arab, and Sikh communities from harassment after the attacks on September 11th. This included training hate crimes, training for law enforcement, helping state and federal attorneys establish legal protections for these communities, and instructing school officials to develop plans for addressing backlash among students. 2005, using rumor control measures to respond to allegations of racial disparities following disaster relief efforts after Hurricane Katrina. Wow. The CRS also countered claims of widespread looting and violence with a coordinated media campaign to fact-check sensationalized reports, as was the case in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina.
So you can see what they're doing, though, here through all this stuff. This is all narrative control, especially here. I mean, this is, like, really egregious narrative control. But they're making sure that the media doesn't put out that, hey, there's a bunch of blacks running through the city just stealing, looting, and murdering after the hurricane destroyed the city, or part of the city anyway. Rumor control. Yeah, narrative control.
As was the case in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, rumor control is one of the CRS' primary strategies for maintaining public order. During periods of unrest and conflict, this often takes the form of coordinated media messaging, ensuring that local and national outlets dispel misinformation and avoid unverified stories that could escalate the problem. In the modern era, social media has become the new frontier for the CRS narratives, serving as both a powerful tool and a major hurdle for the agency. As online platforms replace traditional media as the public's primary news source, the CRS has adapted to work with other government departments and third-party organizations to monitor misinformation and counter with their own trusted sources. Social media allowed the CRS to ramp up its community outreach efforts as well, and representatives were on the ground around the country in the aftermath of the Trayvon Martin, 2012, Eric Garner, 2014, Michael Brown, 2014, and Alton Sterling, 2016 shootings. Though each of these incidents led to violent protests, and in the case of Sterling, the murder of three Louisiana police officers and the attempted murder of three more, the CRS downplayed the situation and claimed to be actively promoting peace. Similar strategies were deployed after the Pulse nightclub shooting in 2016 and the deadly Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville in 2017. The CRS...
It's so funny they always call it the deadly Unite the Right. Like, I'm sorry, what was deadly about it? So some fat girl got hit by a car and had a heart attack and died. By calling it the deadly rally, that makes it sound like there was like a ton of death. And there was one fat lady that died of a heart attack. That's hardly a deadly riot, you know? Sorry. That's just one person dying of obesity. It's not the same thing.
The CRS saw unprecedented public involvement during the George Floyd riots of 2020,
oh, yeah.
With the agency claiming to have acted as an impartial, confidential facilitator, working to help stakeholders identify and implement solutions that best meet their needs. These riots caused an estimated $2 billion in damages across 20 states, though the CRS makes no mention of this.
Yeah, I'm sure. And notice how they talk, though, right? Notice how they talk. It's always that sanitized, deracialized corporate speak, right? It's that they're facilitating the working with stakeholders to help identify and implement solutions that best suited their needs. The fuck does that even mean? That's a word salad. It doesn't mean anything. You're just saying, you're making mouth sounds that don't mean anything, dude. These are just words. The configuration in which you are putting them does not mean anything. Like, that doesn't convey any information at all. That is the most, that kind of thing is the most generic statement you could possibly make. Like, what does it mean? It just means we did things for people that they wanted done and stuff. The fuck does that mean? Yeah, stakeholders is such an SJW term. It is, and it's also a term that is especially, it's something that people like the BlackRock Jew are very fond of. And they were the ones that really seemed to get that used far and wide. They started using things like stakeholder capitalism.
But the CRS is not alone in its efforts to seize on social media as a tool to control public responses. Controlled spontaneity. The online campaigns organized by the CRS bear a striking resemblance to a UK-based government planning program known as Controlled Spontaneity. First reported in 2019 by the outlet Middle East Eye, the British government spent years developing hashtags, focus testing imagery, and drafting statements for politicians and community leaders, all to create a spontaneous response in the event of a terrorist attack. According to the outlet, impromptu demonstrations, candlelight vigils, street art displays, and online comments were all prepared far in advance to redirect public outrage and instead focus on empathy for the victims and a sense of unity with strangers.
Wow.
Another critical component of the controlled spontaneity strategy was encouraging family members of slain citizens to publicly disavow hatred and call for peace. Yeah, consequences of the cover-up.
That's it right there. The critical component of the controlled spontaneity strategy was encouraging family members of slain citizens to publicly disavow hatred and call for peace. That's the core of the whole thing right there. Tell people not to react in the natural way they should react and pretend that it's about something else is basically what that boils down to.
For the past 60 years, the Community Relations Service has worked tirelessly to prevent the public from fully recognizing the problem of anti-white racism in the United States, and it has done so with the full support of the U.S. government and the funding of the American taxpayer. Prioritizing peace and unity within a society is a noble goal in and of itself, but under the guise of social harmony, groups like the CRS have downplayed and normalized clear instances of race-based hatred and bias, so long as the victims have the right skin color. Moreover, they have accomplished this by capitalizing on grieving families, using their pain to advance a hidden agenda directly under the noses of the American public. This organization exists openly in the federal government. It maintains 10 regional offices and 14 field offices around the country, and its operating costs are free.
Whoa! They got 10 regional offices and 14 field offices. So they got 24 total offices around the country. Yikes. So I'm sure those are stationed in 10 different major cities scattered across the continent. And I'm sure they have another 14 smaller ones scattered in other somewhat big cities or areas. Wow. This is crazy. The crazy thing is that, like it's kind of saying here, the American people don't know about this. They have no idea why these people are saying this stuff. In fact, I'm sure most people don't look into it very carefully, and they think that these family members of these people just want to say like what they're saying. That, oh, no, race has nothing to do with this. Of course it does. Of course it does.
Freely discussed in the halls of Congress as a simple budgetary item. Even so, only a vanishingly small percentage of the public is even aware of the CRS existence, let alone the effect it has had on their history and their daily lives. It is precisely this relative anonymity that allows tragedies like those that claimed the lives of Aidan Clark, Andy Probst, and Jonathan Lewis to continue on an almost daily basis. And until the public is made aware of the script their government has put in place, the rampant criminality and unchecked flow of third world immigration that enables these tragedies will continue completely unabated. For more on the Aidan
and that's what it is right there. That's what it is. They want the rampant criminality and unchecked flow of third world immigration that enables these tragedies to continue unabated. They want that. That's a feature, not a bug. This thing here. They want to play, does it?
He did.
And I've been seeing a lot of videos on X, on YouTube, of people from that Springfield, Ohio, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're complaining about how horrible the drivers of the people that the migrants that are just getting dropped off, they don't know how to drive and they're crashing into cars everywhere.
Our own home state of Florida is also a huge hotbed of Haitian immigration.
So this is the guy that wrote it, I think, given his picture. I think that's the same guy.
It happened to us, and it happens constantly. But let's go back to the story of Aidan Clark. This is his dad a couple days ago speaking at a press conference about the death of his son.
We're going to skip this because we just played it. So, if you just got here, we're talking about the Community Relations Service thing in as much detail as we're able to. I've said multiple times, my biggest frustration is I want to know what is being said to these families. I want to know what the fuck is being said to these families. And they won't tell you. Like, even when I do, like, the deep AI search for it and shit, it can't even dig up, like, some family coming out having regrets of being coerced into saying these things. That's the thing that kind of bugs me, because think about it. Like, let's say this happened to someone in your family, and like you're a son or you're a daughter, and these people came to you and they threatened you and they said, listen, you're going to come out there, you're going to make this public statement saying, oh, race had nothing to do with it, blah, blah, blah. And if you don't, when the chimp out comes, you're going to be legally responsible for all the consequences, all the burned down businesses, you have to pay for all those burned down businesses and so forth, right? Imagine they told you that, and for whatever reason, let's say you were not a strong racialist, and you just said, all right, fine, you gave in, okay? After you went out and did that, how come it is that no one does this and then feels a sense of regret? And then turns around and goes on Twitter or Facebook or where the fuck ever, and writes out a big like anger piece, right? A big effort post about, hey, they told me to do this. I didn't want to do this, but they threatened me to do this, and I had to do this, and just confessed that they were coerced into doing it. How come no one has done that? Because I know these people are being coerced. It's obvious. The thing is, I can't prove it. I just know it based on the results. I can see the consequences from the reactions and from the statements, but we don't have any testimony by any of these families saying that, oh, they forced us to say this. It's got to be out there. Somebody's got to have done that. I think the closest we might have to that is the Ethan Liming thing, where in his case, he was approached by the NJP people, by the National Justice Party people. Unfortunately, I don't think we can find any of that. I mean, there used to be videos of them talking about this. I'm pretty sure all that's been deleted when that fell apart. Let's see if I can find it anyway. Let's see if it's somewhere. It might still be somewhere. There's one from 2 years ago of me talking about it on episode 400. It's so funny. I mean, there's them doing the protest. I remember the protest, but that's not really... Yeah, that's all that comes up. That's too bad. If I just search Ethan Liming. It's too bad because there was NJP. Is that it? That might be a strike and mic thing. That's it. Yeah, it's just them discussing it. It's too bad. Oh, wait, is that it? I remember the protest, but it wasn't the protest. It was after. Shit. Oops. I don't think it's... No, wrong thing. I think this is just the protest, though. It's not gonna... Not what I'm looking for. No, I don't think I'm gonna find it. That's too bad. Oh, well, I think you get the idea, though.
Hatred against immigrants.
Yeah.
I don't want to sit here and judge a parent who lost their child. That's the worst thing that could ever happen to anybody. So I'm not going to make commentary on their whole thing. You know, he said we're not, you know, politicizing our son's death, even as he called out politicians. But these are grieving parents, so I'm not holding them responsible for incoherent things they might say.
Yeah.
But this is a part of a pattern that is very alarming once you observe it. Let's go to this next slide, which is Jonathan Lewis Jr. This was a kid who, a few years ago, was beaten to death by a mob of black students outside of his school.
They killed him?
Some of them were picking on one of his friends. He intervened to try to stop the bullying. They curb stomped him to death.
Oh,
geez. He went to the hospital in a coma, died about 6 days.
How many kids are there? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6?
So far, they've charged 8.
With murder?
With various crimes related to the assault.
Okay.
This was a statement from Jonathan Lewis Sr. The human race is calling, screaming for us to see our unity, calling us to break the cycle of the imprisonment of violence and apathy, begging us to see that when we gather together, great power of change is possible. Great power of awareness will be directed to the mob so the mob can demand change, can cry out to humanity and scream the pain of the children. This is a humanity thing, beloved people of the United States, not a race thing.
That sounds like a canned response, like how the other guy did.
Hold that thought.
I'll hold it.
It does sound like a canned response. It does sound like a canned response. Yeah, that's one way to put it for sure, Serbian, yeah.
Hold that thought,
that sounds really
you're
weird.
On the right track.
My freaking kid just got murdered.
Next slide. Yeah. Andy Probst. This was a guy who was a 36-year veteran police chief in California. He retired to Las Vegas.
I don't really want to go because we just went over the whole
racism.
What?
Doing it, bitch.
Are you?
And when after the incident, a lot of his friends put out a GoFundMe, not to cover funeral expenses, but to take time off of work so they could mourn properly.
Oh my God.
So they didn't want to throw him a funeral. They just didn't want to have to go to work for a few days. So in every one of these cases, I believe for the most part that it can be traced back to the Department of Justice's Community Relations Service, this group that not a lot of people hear about. This is their logo. It's a part of our government, but no one has ever heard of it.
Never heard of it.
But they have
Community Relations Service.
They have their finger on the pulse of every race-related incident that takes place in this country. It's part of the Department of Justice, established by the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Its mission was broadened by the Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Hate Crimes Prevention Act, which, if you're familiar with the Matthew Shepard case, that was back in the 90s, a gay guy who was beaten to death.
Tied to a fence, right?
Yeah, and they said it was because it was an anti-gay hate crime, very strong evidence that he was, in fact, a drug dealer who was robbed and beaten to death by people he was selling drugs to.
Oh, weird.
Aha, yeah, see? You see? What I tell you? That's right. There's very strong evidence that was indeed the case. And yet instead, what happened is they spun it up as gay guy was dragged to death for being a fag. When no, he was, whatever this actually transpired there, is much more likely to be the drugs. This often happens. This is what happens. Drug deals go bad. People die. Especially if you're talking about substantial amounts of drugs or really sketchy fucking drugs like meth, you know? That's what happens. People die. Right? So this is not special. This is not unique. This is just kind of what you'd expect, really.
It also turns out that wasn't there rumors that one of the guys that beat him up was gay himself?
Yes.
So that it totally defeats the narrative.
Yeah. Gay on gay crime.
Well, yeah, because it was a gay on gay crime, but back then it was a bunch of intolerant rednecks beat up this gay guy and tied him to a fence. Oh.
And that's what they said. They said that it was like a bunch of intolerant rednecks that beat him up and tied him to the fence and whatever. But that's not what happened, right?
Yeah,
it's not likely what happened. I can't prove that. It's people have tried to prove it. It's very hard to prove.
The CRS was established in 1964. In 2009, when the hate crime bill passed under Obama, the CRS also started protecting on race, sex, and gender grounds as well. According to the service's website, quote, CRS serves as America's peacemaker for communities facing conflict based on actual or perceived race, color, national origin, gender, gender identity, sexual orientation, religion, or disability. CRS is designed to assist communities in resolving conflicts, disputes, and disagreements without resorting to violence or litigation. So basically, it's a law enforcement agency that isn't enforcing law and isn't investigating, but they don't state this in so many words, but the point is, anytime anything happens where it could be a racial issue, they show up and work with victims to try to prevent race and gender-based violence from breaking out.
If that happened to me and I saw somebody walk out to me and be like, hey, don't mention, I'd be like, dude, get the hell out of my face right now. I'm going to say exactly what happened. I'm going to say exactly who did it, and I'm going to tell you exactly how I feel about it. I respect you for Connor, for not saying the thing with the first guy. Was the first kid?
Aiden Clark,
like, to say I wish it was an old white 60-year-old white guy, it's like, bro, the guy didn't have a driver's license and he was dumped in your city by the Biden administration for other reasons, not because they give a shit about Haitians. That's why I'm sick and tired of hearing this nonsense that this administration gives a damn about these people. They don't care. They just drop them off because it's so bad in Haiti. They're like, we'll just drop them there with no housing,
dump
no nothing.
There.
Good luck. Fend for yourself.
Like, what the hell are they saying to these people to compel them to have this kind of narrative? Like,
money.
This is what I'm asking. This guy is asking is what I'm asking. What the fuck are they saying to these people? Are they bribing them or are they intimidating them? Like, what's going on here? Because you're not going to get that. You're not going to get that response naturally. People don't want to do that. People do not want to lie about the death of their family member. Like, that's so crazy. And yet I don't put it past this kind of a government at all to do something like that in order to maintain this, I don't even know what the fuck you call it, empire of perversion that we call it. I think after this point, I just wanted to get a little bit more of what these guys were talking about. But then I think we'll move on. I have some crazy stuff from this fucking Friedman Jew. Man, is he nuts. Ooh-wee. He wants to jail you, dude. He wants to jail you for being an anti-symmetrical. You're not allowed. You're not allowed to be an anti-symmetrical. You're just not allowed. Not permitted. You may not do that.
Yeah, I mean, it must be, but like the guy seemed more passionate about the like racial narrative than his son.
I'm like,
killed.
Your son's dead.
Yeah,
like shouldn't you be mad? Like face the issue at hand. A migrant with no driver's license that was dumped here killed your kid. Involuntary, voluntary, I don't give a shit. You don't have a kid anymore. He's blowing the situation up.
And but then they have somebody that works in PR come to you and they go, listen, we're so sorry about your tragedy, but here's an opportunity for us to work with us on the behalf of your son. Wow. And try and diffuse racial tensions across the country. And by the way, because you're going to do this, it's a service to your country. Here's $1 million payday. Your son's not coming back, but the least we can do is try and make your life a little bit more sustainable. Oh. So
here's
like,
your
that's
script.
How it happened.
Do you, Rob, God forbid, you take that money if that happened to one of your kids?
Well, I mean, it happened to one of my kids. I lost a child. No, I wouldn't. But I also was my daughter died in an accident. She was hit by a vehicle, and I came out right away because it was very public. I was working on the radio at the time. It was reported by the news. I came out and said on the radio, I issued a statement because people were attacking the woman at the time, and I said, hey, it wasn't her fault. And it was like I spoke with the police days after the investigation, and within the first week of, you know, my son was still in the hospital, but I felt the duty to go out there and calm the narrative because people were upset at this woman. And I went, the woman couldn't see. It was dark. It was an accident. It was terrible. But I there's no amount of money that you could have paid me to go out and go, put that woman in jail. She's a migrant Haitian eating cats in Ohio. And she needs to get out of the country. I'd never do that. But some people, I could see how other people who don't have the, you know, didn't have the upbringing that I had and didn't have the support that I had during that time, that they could be easily swayed. It's a very vulnerable time in your life, so I could see how the right people – again, it's a government. The government, if they're good at doing anything, it's propaganda. So imagine they get you at your most vulnerable moment. They sit you down. They offer you a huge sum of money to go out, but they're also going to convince you you're doing good by doing it. I could see how some people could fall for
it. So, Rob, and dude, God rest your kids soul. I honestly, I didn't know, and I mean,
okay.
Thank you for sharing. I love you to death. But Rob, but here's my question though: what if that person was a migrant that was dumped there that didn't have a driver's license? Like
100%, then I would have said, hey, yes, this.
That's what I'm saying.
If the person was drunk or they were high or their blood test came back and there was anything, but the police assured me at the time that it was an accident, and I felt that with the microphone that I had in the community that I was in, it was the best thing that I could do at the time.
Or even beyond that, imagine the scenario in which something horrible like that had happened, and you had reason to suspect that the person responsible for it went out of their way to do it based on the racial dynamics of the situation. Like the case with the one kid outside the school. Imagine if you had seen a video of 8 to 10 white kids curb stomping a black kid to death.
Oh, forget it.
And then a government agency went to that kid's parents and said, hey, don't mention race. First of all, you know that would never happen.
Never.
And you know, even if it did happen, there would be so much outrage over it. They'd be like, the government's trying to cover up another black kid who was murdered by racist white kids. Only you don't see that dynamic playing out. You see large groups of black kids beating the crap out of white kids on a regular basis. It is not that hard to find videos of it happening. So it makes sense for the government to want to come in and say, you want there to be racial harmony. We're not trying to cause incidents. We want to, you know, downplay violent things, even if there's legitimate.
Kevin supported a stream with $18. This is a
problem.
Test donation for $18.
They're exclusively doing it to white families who have lost people to these incidents. They're not doing it to any other group. I have a list of all the different places the CRS has claimed to have been involved since they were created. They intervened in the Selma marches. They prevented riots after the MLK assassination. They protected Muslims after 9/11.
This is what it takes, though. If you really wanted to have a multiracial society, if that's really something you actually wanted, this is what it takes. You have to like use government force to make it a thing. I think that says a lot about it. That it's an unnatural state of things. And that's why we're showing this. I want to really hammer down on that. But this is not a natural state of living. And, you know, it's not just these big incidents like this. It's so much more than that. It's just the sense that, like, we can't even go somewhere in our world without worrying about, you know, the latest, like being a victim of this shit. You can't have your family members or your extended relatives or shit, your fucking neighbors or your friend from school or really anybody you give a fuck about. You can't have them go anywhere without at least having some minor disconnected concern that they may be the next Ethan Liming or they might be the next Jonathan Lewis or they might be the next Austin Metcalf. Like that, anybody you know, anybody you care about could end up like these people. Any one of them could be Jamaica'd at any time. And it's not really, it sucks, but it's the case. Fucking thing works. It does work. Yay.
Kevin supported the stream with
$7. Thanks, Kevin.
This is a test donation.
Kevin doesn't exist, by the way. Kevin, you don't exist. Shut up, Kevin. Well, that's cool. I mean, shit, it works, I guess. I suppose. I was trying to, I developed a few more. Well, I've already had these, but I made some adjustments and whatever to these. I was trying to find a new one that's a little more direct than whatever. So I pinned that for Odyssey because shitbags fucked up our whole thing on Odyssey for now. I mean, everybody else's for that matter. And then bragged about it, which you can see at the top of my channel. It's pinned at the top of my channel. But yeah, so unfortunately we have to do these workaround things now because, yeah. Saboteurs who think that they're like the people that get to decide who does what. And then, you know, sabotage white families. You know, but there are white families that earned their living by making content on Odyssey. Well, they were fucked with too. All because two idiots, well, probably more than two, but certainly two idiots, decided that it's their place to decide who gets to do what. And we're big mad because Odyssey said they can't, like, bedpost and threaten people and, you know, generally be terrorists on their platform anymore. So that's what that's about. And it's fucking beautiful. Just great.
They were on the ground during the Rodney King riots. This is very interesting.
Where were they on Jan 6?
They don't say where they were on January 6th, apparently so. But they said after Hurricane Katrina, quote, CRS's rumor control measures in communities throughout Alabama, Louisiana, and Mississippi responded to allegations of racial disparities following disaster relief efforts. Rumor control efforts.
Rumor control.
So that's saying the quiet part out loud. We are on the ground controlling rumors and spreading propaganda to make one narrative rise up above the other. They were involved in Trayvon Martin. They were involved in Eric Garner and Michael Brown. After the Pulse nightclub shooting, they were out trying to control the narrative on that. They showed up in Charlottesville. They showed up after the Tree of Life synagogue shooting. During COVID, when there was a, quote, anti-Asian American, Native Hawaiian, and Pacific Islander hate that. During COVID, they tried to stop that. Of course, that agenda fell apart once they realized that it wasn't white people who were beating up.
Yeah, it was black guys on the trains in New York punching freaking Asians in the head.
And, of course, they showed up for the George Floyd riots as well.
You know,
this is like on some Men in Black. I never, ever heard about that.
It is basically the government version of Men in Black. It's the government race enforcement version of Men in Black. They pop out of nowhere. People don't even believe they exist. They do this little scheme, scam, whatever. I don't know what you want to call it, whatever it is. And then they disappear.
Amazing reporting. And I'm going to call you. What were you going to say, Umberto? Because I want to go to Brandon. We have a minute.
This is absolutely shameful. Like, it's heartbreaking that the weakest and most feeble people in society, like older men, younger kids, have to pay for our importing people. That I'm not racist at all. There's a single bone of racism in me, but I am a culturalist.
Lame.
Okay. Haitian people, they came in hordes. Before they came to America, they took over Chile. Like thousands upon of Haitian people there. They brought crimes that were never seen before. accidents that we never seen before. Like, I feel bad. Like, I can go here on a rant and I can tell you the story of Haiti since, you know, like the first revolution, yeah, and how Citibank bought the debt from the French about Haiti. Like, they've been through things. Like, I feel for them.
Their history involves an edict that said, kill all the white people in Haiti. Just to give a little teaser of what we can't.
But yeah. But the thing is, these problems are just gonna get bigger.
Oh, I know they are. Remember we talked about UK being cooked?
Yeah.
We're on the back burner. Well, we're on simmer.
And get this, though. So there's a whole epidemic right now that's happening where they're not reporting a lot of crimes that happen. So they keep saying crime's going down, but it's not going down. A lot of states aren't reporting it. And I don't know if you had this in your presentation, Connor, but he showed me the other day. Those guys.
Well, what happened is they published the FBI. So look, they withheld the FBI crime stats for the years of BLM, right? Or 2020 until, I think, late 2022. Then they finally released them, but they omitted the big cities. They omitted, like, L.A., Chicago, you know what I mean? You get the idea, right? New York. And they go, ha, crime stats. Crime's going down. It's like, no, you just cut out all the places where it's the worst. Thanks. Good work.
Guys who drove into that guy on the bike, they got classified as white when they were in court. Mm-hmm. So what the hell's up with that?
Really?
Yeah.
You know, it's really interesting. So my best friend in the world lives in Austin, Texas, and he is very much a lefty. And I've noticed, specifically after the debate, the conversation that we've had continues to get political. Mm-hmm. And it's so weird that I don't criticize his viewpoints at all. He's been my best friend for 25, 30 years. But he always criticizes mine, yeah, and then he claims that I'm the radical one. But I realized in my conversations with him, he lives in Austin, Texas. There is a huge migrant problem. There's a huge homeless problem in that area. And I asked him, when did the homeless problem actually start? And he denies that there's any type of problem at the border. And he said that the homeless problem really started right after COVID. And I said, so around like 2001, he goes, yeah. And I said, or 2021, he goes, yeah. And I go, so when you look at the numbers from the immigration charts and it shows that like millions of people are flooding into the country, what do you say then? And he goes, I don't see it here. I go, it's literally driving in the freeways of Austin, Texas, and the medians are camps that are set up in port-a-johns for these people to go to the bathroom. Oh. And the guy lives it in his reality and he's still blind to it. And like, I don't, so with like the propaganda, the brainwashing that the government is able to do, I'm watching it in real time in a person that I love, and I go, I don't even know how to fix it.
To make one final point on the problem,
because I got to move the brand.
We got to conclude here, but in 2019,
that's the real one. Okay, cool.
The outlet Middle East Eye that you know monitors global Islamic issues and stuff going on found a thing in the UK that was a government program called Controlled Spontaneity, and basically what it was a thing in case of terrorist events. They had pre-prepared hashtags, social media posts, influencers, basically everything lined up to steer the public towards peace of, you know, like after a terrorist sets off a pressure cooker bomb at an Ariana Grande concert and kills children.
Yeah.
They flood the internet with hashtags about how, you know, there needs to be peace and it's not the fault of the...
Oh, we know what they did in response to that. Let me see if I can find that, because it was a fucking wild thing what they did with that. I'm going to find it. Show you what the kind of things they do. Yes. Okay, so this is what I'm looking for. Perfect. Right. Yes, that is indeed the thing. So in response, this is what we read in that thing. It talked about the one that happens in the UK. It was the controlled spontaneity thing, right? And they come up with all these impromptu blah, 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 right? This is what that actually looks like.
Thank you.
That's why it keeps happening, because you refuse to look back in anger. When you're supposed to be angry. You should be angry. Being angry is the right response. Oi, don't look back in anger, mate. Yeah. Yeah. Man. Shit. Alright. That's a good segue. It's a good segue there into some other shit. Did we mention that your government is being increasingly Judaized? Did we mention this? Another second part to this. Oh, I see where that is. Okay, cool. So, this is a good segue here. So, your country, specifically your government, is being increasingly Judaized. Let's not forget this.
It's an honor to be here with the first Jewish president of the United States.
Hey, what now? What's that? What?
And
what?
If he isn't, he should be. United States. President of the Jewish president of the United States. Jewish president of the United States. The first 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 Jewish president of the United States. And if he isn't, he should be.
He should be, huh? All right, well, he's always been a good friend to them, especially since the 1980s. That goes back way further than that. We've done Trump things. I don't think we've ever done it properly. It's very hard to do, to find, because to do it properly, you got to go back to the father, to Fred Trump. Fred Trump was, we did, and I don't feel like we did it quite thoroughly enough when we did, but Fred Trump was a big friend of the Jews. They were tight. They were thick as thieves, right? They were good buddies. He was a good Shabbos, right? Well, Trump carries on in that tradition. Now, I think he became a much deeper friend to them in the late 80s, early 90s, when he started to have financial problems. Eventually, he goes under business-wise. He goes business bankrupt, right? When his Taj Mahal and his other gambling concerns in Atlantic City go tits up in a economic downturn. So the result of this is big Jewish bankers come in and they say he's worth more to us financially alive than dead. And they financially save his ass. Well, he didn't get that for free. They don't do shit like that for free, especially when you're talking about billions of dollars. You're not talking about, you know, this is not like lend me 100 grand. This is like, you're talking about billions with a B. For scale, you should remember $1 million in time is like 11 days. $1 billion in time, you have a dollar as a second, right? $1 billion in time is 37 years. 11 days in seconds versus 37 years. It gives you an idea of the scale difference between a million and a billion. So they don't give you that kind of thing for nothing. Some kind of deal is cut. This guy has been appointed the ambassador to Israel. We mentioned him briefly on the other show on, what was that, Wednesday, when Carl was on. Check out that show if you haven't seen it. I thought it was a good one, actually. Yeah, I thought it was a good one. So check that out if you haven't seen it. Carl Rattle was on Wednesday. Anyway, so this is David Friedman. He is the ambassador to Israel. He's actually been the ambassador to Israel before. I wouldn't realize this, but when I was looking for stuff on him, I found, you know, confirmed that information. So this is what he said. I brought it up briefly to Carl because he was a, you know, expert anti-Semite, but this is, I wanted to see what it is again. I wanted to kind of dig into this a little more. Because this is pretty serious. This is pretty fucking serious. What he's saying here.
We've cut off hundreds of millions of dollars to the most elite, but at the same time, the most anti-Semitic universities on campus. We have begun deporting illegal aliens who hate Jews and advocate for the destruction of Israel.
Funny how, if you're an illegal alien, your ability to stay here is dependent on your philo-Semitism, if you're an illegal. It's a weird thing for it to be dependent on, right? If you didn't really know what this group is about, you'd look at that and go, wait, what? The fuck does him liking or disliking Jews have to do with his ability to stay here? What hell does that have to do with anything? Doesn't really make a whole lot of sense, does it? Now, if you're here, you probably know why that makes sense. I'm referring, of course, to the average person who has no idea why that makes sense.
We have, and this is a bigger point, because when you think about all the people who are in the business of fighting anti-Semitism, there are many, many NGOs, there are many organizations, there are many people who commit their lives to it, and they're all very good people and have enormously good intentions. But a government can do in 2 months more than any organization can do in its lifetime. And so when we talk about the importance of a bipartisan fight against anti-Semitism, which of course I endorse, and I, as my predecessor said, I condemn anti-Semitism on the right and on the left. I'm an equal opportunity condemner of anti-Semitism.
You're alluding to Candace Owens and Tucker Carlson.
Yeah, none of them are any good on the right.
Sorry, how is Tucker Carlson an anti-Semite now? I'm sorry, I missed that fucking... I mean, I don't really watch Tucker, but I missed that Tucker episode where he's like, fuck Jews! I missed that episode. I mean, I don't... Like I said, I don't really watch it, but you know what I mean? Like, I would have seen the clips, but you know what I mean? Like, I missed that. Like, when did that happen? When was Tucker like, you know, fuck the Jew! Hail Hitler! Like, when did that happen? I didn't see that. I didn't see that episode. In fact, I don't think it happened. That's weird. Trump's grandfather owned a hotel and brothel in the Yukon in Canada. That was in the 80s that he owned the brothel, made good money because of the gold rush. That doesn't surprise me. Yeah, they've been involved in that sort of stuff for a long time. I mean, it's like Elon Musk, right? We're told that Elon Musk came out of nowhere from poverty or something. No. Elon Musk came from a family that was like, they were, what was it, emerald dealers, I believe it was. And, you know, you can imagine that if he's going to New York to be an emerald dealer, you can imagine the type of individuals that's putting him in contact with. Probably people that look a lot like this fucking guy.
Right, on the left, I don't like any of these anti-Semites, and I'm not shy about it. But the government, a government, the United States government, or the government of France, or the government of any other country, has the power to rein in anti-Semitism in a much more effective way. And you know, people say, well, you know, the governments are not in the business of changing the way people think. That's true. But, you know, to my thinking, most people who are, you know, anti-Semites, most of these people running around, we're not going to win their hearts and minds because they don't have hearts and they don't have minds. So, you know, how are we going to, there's no reason to think we're ever going to convince them. But we can deport them. We can put them in jail. We can make their lives miserable. We can cut off their funding. And that's what the Trump administration is doing for the first time. And
put them in jail, huh? Well, you can't do that legitimately. Not in America, not yet. So, if he's not lying, that means that they're using some weird workaround to frame people for other crimes or get people on other crimes. And what their real motive is to get them on anti-Semitism, but they can't. So they find some other thing and they stretch it until it works. Right? They exaggerate the consequences. They They want to get them for anti-Semitism, but you can't technically get them for anti-Semitism. So they get him for something else, like, what would it be? Like, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, tax evasion or something, right? Like, some shit like that. I wonder how many people have been sent to jail because they don't like Jews. Hate littering, yeah. Makes you wonder. Here it does make you wonder. Okay, who is this fucking guy? The reasonable thing to ask ourselves. Let's find out a little more about him. Ambassador David Friedman. This is the lovely guy at APEC. Let's see what he's got to say.
Since that date, about 10 months ago, our American presence in Jerusalem has done nothing but grow. If you've been recently to the embassy building in the Jerusalem suburb of Arnona, you've noticed how it is a very large construction site. By the summer, it will have more than doubled in size. And with the merger of the Jerusalem consulate into the embassy, the United States Embassy in Jerusalem now includes 10 interconnected diplomatic facilities, including the iconic mission on Agron Street, Rehov Agron, right in the center of town.
Oh, I missed that? Oh, no. Klexen SS said, fuck, it's not working today. What? What's up? Where it said, didn't show them all. It should only. That thing's tweaking out. And. There we go. Oh, Claxton SS. He says, thanks, Nick. Didn't know about CRS. Everything is worse than I thought. Well, yeah, man. That's the idea. Sorry I missed that until just now. That's the idea, is we want to show people what this is about. I think this is important to understand why things are happening like this, you know, and I think that they do a lot to try to cover that up. They don't want people to know. They really don't want people to know. I mean, look what they do. Like, look at how far they go out of their way to, like, try to hide these things. Please do, though, salute Klaxon. Please do support the show if you're able to. We did open the new support thing, so if you're able to, that's worth a try. I'd like to see if it works. It should work. Tester worked anyway. And, yeah, let's do that. So this guy, this is him with the Heritage Foundation. This was something they made in, as it says there, January 22, 2024. Well, that's very interesting. Timing there is very, very interesting. What's going on exactly in January of 2024 around here? This is the same group, the Heritage Foundation, that came out with the Project Esther plan. They're the ones that came out with Project Esther. As I said before, Project Esther is not new. It's just a new format and a new set of plans, basically. But the agenda there is as old as can be. Where are the things not showing up? It's not showing all my donation messages for some reason. What if I reset this? FTJ still works pretty well. Let's see if I can get this thing to work the way it's supposed to. I'll make sure I don't miss shit. I don't like missing shit. Huh. Yeah. I say show only the donation messages and then it just shows none. I know there is not none, so that's not good. I'll have to tell them about that. Okay, well, at least I can see it the old-fashioned way, I suppose. Oh, wow. Thank you, Claxon SS. I appreciate you, sir. Yeah, I think it's something that I think a lot of people should know about. You know, I think it really is important. It's one of these kind of things where, you know, whenever these things happen, it's a good thing to point to and tell the people in your life, the average people who don't know about this shit, why they're seeing what they're seeing. You know, I think that's a way of spreading the awareness. That's a way of red pilling the normies, I guess, is one way to say it. A way of getting people to understand that don't. And I think, you know, if this can spread, it helps work against what they're trying to do. And I think what they're trying to do should be worked against. I mean, what they're trying to do is basically cover up the truth, right? They don't want people to look at these instances and say, wait a minute, this is because multiracialism was forced down our throats. They don't want people coming to that conclusion, that's for fuck sure. This is him during that.
Hi, it's Ambassador David Friedman, and thank you for listening. My deepest thanks to the Heritage Foundation and James Carafano for hosting this seminar, and to Eliav Benjamin and my dear friends Eli Kohanim and Pastor Mario Bramnick for your essential work in combating anti-Semitism. Before October 7th, anti-Semitism was on the rise, disturbingly so. We were observing a marked increase of violence against Jews, as well as far too many incidents of overt and covert discrimination and verbal abuse.
I'm still looking for these examples of violence against Jews. I haven't seen any of that. So where is that? Is that like real? Because I haven't seen any of that. What they mean, of course, really, in all reality, like what they're really referring to, if they're not referring to something that's ancient, like the Tree of Life thing, they're referring to like the fact that some Jewish students got pushed around in Palestine protests, basically. Because I didn't see it. Like not in the way that they're kind of making it sound like, right? They're trying to make it sound like there was, you know, these Jewish students that were being like beaten to death or some shit like that. And it's just, it wasn't happening. It just didn't happen. So, no. It just didn't happen.
But since October 7th, anti-Semitism has become a full five-alarm fire. Even before Israel responded to the brutal attacks of October 7th, to the murder, the rape, the torture, the kidnapping.
The rapes were completely disproven. There was no rapes. Sorry. Not on October 7th, anyway. Like, maybe after that or before that, maybe, but not on it, no. Also, they just didn't have time for that. They didn't have time to go in there and, like, you know, rape assault these Jewish women. It just wasn't a thing. Sorry. It seems like they really want that to have happened. You know, they had that whole... I mean, we watched the whole thing. We did a logging of the entire fucking thing. That movie. It was called... such a weird name. It's like Screams in Silence or... Screams Before... Silence Before Screams or something like that. You can find it on YouTube. We watched it on the show before. It's basically their documentary that's supposed to prove that these Jew women were raped in this October 7th thing. It doesn't do any such thing. It's basically a bunch of them telling stories and then like showing like the phone and being like, look at this horrible, horrible, oh, this is terrible. Like I can't even look at this. Oh, and they're like holding the phone like this, right? So it's like you can almost see what's on it, but not really. So it could be anything or nothing, and it's not really proof, you know? If it was proof, they'd show you the screen, right? They're not showing you the screen, though. They'd show you the screen. They didn't show you the screen. They'd be holding it like this, right? So you could like almost see something, but you couldn't tell what it is. And, you know, it looked sort of like, you know, somebody dead on the ground, but you couldn't really tell. And it didn't prove a rape. It proved maybe somebody was dead, maybe. I don't know. It was somebody's on the ground. You couldn't really see anything, really. And it was this sort of like implied evidence thing that really was, in actuality, it was an utter lack of evidence. That didn't bother them.
Kidnapping that was inflicted on so many innocent civilians. Even before that, the pro-Hamas forces were out in number. Professors on college campuses voiced their exhilaration at Hamas's accomplishments.
Hamas.
At elite universities gathered to celebrate this resistance to the so-called occupation. And the streets were soon filled with vile, ugly, and hateful demonstrations that piggybacked on the violence and anarchy of other progressive movements. From the river to the sea, shouted the protesters without the slightest ability to identify either. Globalize the Intifada was another refrain, again shouted by people unfamiliar with the term or its meaning. Most of us were caught off guard, deeply shocked by this anti-Jewish hate. How could people who purportedly stood for women's rights celebrate the rape of women?
Patton 537 says, "We defeated the wrong enemy." George S. Patton. You're very big on the Patton and his quotes. You're a big Patton fan. Big time Patton fan. Patton 537 is a major Patton fan. Thank you, Patton.
How could people who purportedly stood against the abuse of children celebrate when children were burned and beheaded? How could people who stood for gay and transgender people side with an organization that summarily executes them? It just made no sense. Of course, those of us paying attention may have been shocked, but we certainly were not surprised. This had been building for some time. This global intifada has been gaining ground for years on college campuses, in progressive confabs, and in organized movements like Black Lives Matter and Defund the Police. The key word here among all these groups, as they use it, is intersectionality. The world is said to be made up of two components, the oppressed and the oppressors, those of color, those who are white, those in power, those who are not. No nuance.
Yeah, that dialectic, where does that come from, Jew? Hey, Giga Jew, where does that come from? He's going to pretend like he doesn't know. Of course he knows. That's communist dialectics. This power dialectics of like the powerful and the weak, controlled, the controller, the oppressed and the oppressor. This is all Marxist stuff. He knows that. And he also knows where that all comes from. He knows that it's their stuff. But he also knows that most people listening to him, watching this, will never know that. He can say it as if that isn't true, and it doesn't matter.
No context, no excuses. If you are on the wrong side of the identity spectrum, you are guilty. And Israel, of course, is on the wrong side, according to these groups. It's on the wrong side of this identity calculus. Actually, unfairly so. Israel's not a white country. Around half its population are black or brown. Israel also is a minority. It's a single Jewish state surrounded by nearly 30 Muslim nations. And Israel, unlike its neighbors, affords equal rights to all the minority groups for whom the progressive left fights so passionately. It doesn't matter. All these groups have targeted Israel and the Jewish people because that's where the money is.
The Jewish
anti-Semitism
people.
Pays. Let's face it.
Anti-Semitism pays? What? Since when? Anti-Semitism pays like shit. What are you talking about? What the fuck is this guy talking about? Anti-Semitism pays my ass. You're crazy. This is a crazy noogle. That's not true. This is bullshit. I can't believe he would say some shit like that and just like, he just counts on the people listening to have no idea what the fuck they're...
Universities get massive donations from those opposed to Israel.
What?
Professors get tenure by standing against Israel. It's almost impossible to get tenure if you stand with Israel. BLM extorts money from corporations who fear boycotts. It is a cynical and hypocritical dynamic that puts Israel and Jews within the crosshairs. I don't want to minimize anti-Semitism on the right. Neo-Nazis are despicable and condemnable, but they are easily identifiable and they have not achieved, thank God, any or much institutional backing.
Wow. All right, from the Jew's mouth there. That's that unfortunately is not wrong at all.
It's on the wrong side of this identity calculus. Actually, unfairly so. Israel's not a white country. Around half its population. Professors get tenure by standing against any or much institutional backing and condemnable. But they are easily identifiable and they have not achieved, thank God, any or much institutional backing. I and many of my colleagues have been warning for years about anti-Semitism on the left. It has infiltrated and insinuated itself into the halls of the Ivy League in corporate America, along, of course, with the UN and the EU. And it has achieved extraordinary power. You can walk into a cocktail party in Manhattan and spout Nazi rhetoric, and you'll be shown the door.
Okay.
But if you express the conviction that Israel should not exist, you will probably be poured a drink. That's the difference, and that's the danger of progressive anti-Semitism. And many organizations are now coming to this realization. Unfortunately, they're coming to it far too late. What can we do now? I'm not a strong proponent of trying to change the hearts and minds of anti-Semites. I'm not sure that they are possessed of either.
It says you don't have hearts or minds, chat. Ladies and gentlemen, Giga Jew here says you have neither hearts nor minds. He says, if you had hearts and minds, you would be totally cool with them doing all the shit that they're doing. You would be totally cool. You would be entirely empathetic to their need to slaughter all the Palestinians and then move on to you. You would just empathize with that because you'd know in your hearts and minds that they have a right to exist. No. It's fucking rich hearing that shit. It's fucking rich hearing that shit from this guy. The ambassador of a country that just slaughtered, like, I don't know, 15, 20,000 children, like 150,000, like, adult Palestinians, just for, because they wanna. I'm not even the biggest Palestinian lover, per se. I just think that it's fucking sick what they did, and, you know, don't think for a minute that they wouldn't be doing this shit here if they could. They'd be coming after you. And Serbian Bull for his anti-symmetrical fundings. They'd get him. Salute to you. The balls on this fucking guy. It just kind of leaves you thunderstruck. I'm just like running out of things to say. Because it's like, what can you even say about this? This is so in your face.